All right. Good evening, everybody. It's the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I am Mike DePalma alongside my co-host, Dan Santarella. Neil is out. I believe he's shooting a pilot tonight.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, he's got his gigs at Gotham, and it's finally paying off. I believe, I don't want to blow up his spot. He's in some sort of, he's got some sort of deal with some media market. I don't know if it's national, local, but you're going to see him on the big screen someday or the small screen somewhere. He deserves it.
He's a talented kid.
He's got the whole package. We got Tony D behind the glass. We got a great show this evening. We're going to talk a little League baseball. A little later on, we got Charlie Roof calling in. He's a pitcher for the Little League team, which will be great. He'll be calling in. And we actually have another great guest calling in later on in the show. Tommy John will be joining us. You heard of Tommy John? You familiar with his work?
I have heard of him.
Yeah.
He is tremendous, and I'm excited for that interview.
Well,
it's going to be fun.
I got a quick story to tell you about. It's about, I know you don't listen to sports talk radio. God bless you.
Which I
is
try
good,
not to.
Which is good. That's why you're very good on this show, because you don't let anybody. But sometimes I listen, and sometimes I'll be honest with you, I get very jealous that these guys are on the media markets they're on, and we're here rubbing two sticks together doing a podcast, right? So I'm listening on Saturday morning. I go to play baseball. I and my hardball team were playing at Harbor Yard. Big game. It was awesome. Got to play there. So as I'm driving down there, I'm listening to ESPN radio. Whatever schmuck is on Saturday mornings. He's got Oscar Robertson on. It's his guest. Saturday morning.
The big O.
Couldn't ask for a bigger guest.
No.
So I kiss the tail end of this interview. He's adding nothing. His final question. Oscar Robertson. Now, look, we got criticized. We got hate mail last week.
We did.
Because we do terrible interviews, apparently.
We're bad people.
But his final question to Oscar Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
If you could change one thing in this world, what would it be? Like, he's a beauty pageant contestant.
Yeah.
So Oscar Robertson's like, he would want no more wars. That's how this interview ended.
Yeah.
It was the goal for me, like some listener to call, like, dude, you hear Oscar Robertson? This guy doesn't even like war. This guy's a trailblazer here. This guy's got Oscar Robertson. He asked,
yeah,
if you could change one thing in this world, what would you do?
He's one of the greatest guards of all time. Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, top 10, no matter what, player of all time. Sometimes people are in the top 5.
Well, there's no question about that. But
yeah.
But the thing is, you would ask him something about, you know, you're involved with the University of Cincinnati basketball program still. You do.
No.
Top 50 player of all time. He wants to talk about what he's going to change, and the fact that, unlike most of us, he doesn't like war.
He doesn't like war.
Most of us love it. You know?
Yeah,
and
there you
have
it.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we all can agree on that one, because
right.
I mean, it made me so, I swear to you, it got
yeah.
me so angry. I almost called you. Just be like, you know what, we're over here
That's right.
getting hate questions. I thought we had a good interview with Dan Duquette, and this guy is on ESPN Radio. He's doing something a lot better than we're doing. The ESPN Radio, New York, the biggest media market in the country.
Right.
And that's what he's, his wrap-up. He's going to tie it all together.
See,
with Oscar Robertson.
We got to get the big O on. And ask him about drought and famine.
Yeah, we got to ask
find out.
Hey,
right there.
What's up with this serious situation?
Yeah,
I mean, are we sided with the rebels?
Yeah.
What do you think?
What was going on in Darfur? You think we should get into that, or you want to talk about your crossover dribble? I mean, you know.
I mean, we got a lot to get to. We got a couple callers up on the screen here. Actually, oh boy, we got our boss calling in. I hope this is going to go well. We got our boss, Roger Noriega. Roger, are you with us?
Yes, guys, I'm with you and enjoying the program. Who told you that you guys interviewed badly? What's up with that?
Oh, you don't want to know.
We don't want to know, but we got a very bad review. We were told it was a big missed opportunity with Dan Duquette, and that we compared it to Mike Francesa interviewing Bill Parcells.
Oh, cut it out. No, they didn't say that.
Yeah. But you know what? We were honest. We didn't hide from it. We put it right on our Facebook page and on our website and said, you know what? Maybe we were wrong. Maybe we did have a bad interview. I don't know.
Well, you know what? I didn't know that you guys were receiving the hate mail. I heard the program, and I guess I'm dumb. I thought it was a great interview. Sorry, guys. And that's why I don't always catch your program live. I always have to hear it in the archive. And this time, I mean, look, I wasn't there for the last two interviews. And you guys, Tommy John, I saw this guy pitch many times. I'm like, man, if I get to listen to this, it'll be awesome. I've heard these guys interview. They're awesome.
Well, you're the only opinion that matters, Roger, so we appreciate that one. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, honestly, guys, I'm not going to take away from your program. I just want to say this. You guys are the stars, man. You guys are the ones that have the audience numbers. And you know what? If people are telling you that you have issues with the interviews, guess what, guys? People are listening.
That's all that matters. I guess it's when you know you've made it, when you've got some guy telling you you stink.
That's right, baby. Well, okay, wait. More than one.
Yeah, right. Those will come tomorrow when they tell us we forgot to ask Tommy John about his surgery.
Well, fair enough. If you guys forget, I swear I'll jump in. I just want to ask him, though. Hey, guys, if you guys want to ask him for me, I just want to listen in. But you guys know the 1981 World Series, right? Probably the worst managerial call in all time, right?
Of course.
Yeah, and I just want to know if he's playing.
Yeah. Well, you're a Dodgers fan, though, right?
Well, actually, I am a Yankee fan, and if you've noticed, I'm in L.A. I am a baseball connoisseur, so I will not deny being a Dodgers fan. I love baseball, guys. The only team I will not watch is the Reds. You guys really want to go screw with some idiots? Go screw with Reds Nation. Go to any fan page anywhere, and you rip the Reds, and it's like Armageddon, baby. Screw Syria. It's Armageddon.
I don't want to mess with anybody that close to Kentucky, to be honest with you. They're right across the river, and those people are dangerous.
The Hatfields and McCoys.
That's exactly right.
You know what? I should have known better. You're right.
You get the geography lesson now.
That's right. Oh, man. But, yeah, guys, you guys do a lot of good stuff, and I appreciate it. And trust me, guys, it's going to pay off. But for now, Tommy John, man, got pulled. I think one of the worst decisions ever. But anyway, great, guys. Do your program, man. I'm in. I'm just I'm a passenger on this bullet train, baby.
All right. Well, Roger, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
And keep listening. Hopefully we make you proud. That's Roger Noriega. That's the president and owner of NDB Media. So gallery chiming in. We like that. But, yeah, like I said, we do have a couple guests today. We're going to have Charlie Roof calling in a little bit later on. He's a pitcher for the Westport Little League team, which would be great. But we got to start talking, and I'm going to maybe hijack this show a little bit about my. And now, look, you're a Cubs fan, so you know about trials and tribulations.
I know about pain.
You know about pain, but I mean, you want to talk about a bad 3-day stretch as a Met and Jet fan? First, you look. Now, I was against the signing. I was against the draft pick of Geno Smith the day it happened. Put it on our Facebook page. It was just the wrong move to make. I mean, the guy was you put a guy in who was a questionable NFL quarterback to begin with. You put him in a situation like the Jets with all these expectations. I thought from the beginning that they were actually handling the quarterback situation pretty well, actually, because they were allowing it to be a real battle. They weren't handing the keys over to Geno. He had to go out and earn it. He hadn't earned it up to this point. You got to see Sanchez, and although he had some flaws in the preseason, he showed you some things. He showed you exactly what he was. Not as bad as the butt fumble and all of that from last year, but, you know, still his flaws. And then you give Geno Smith a shot, and it was perfect. He was going to get his shot with the first-teamers, third preseason game. It's close to a regular season game as you're going to get as a third preseason game. And he just fell flat on his ass. I mean, three interceptions, runs out of the back of the end zone, looked just not ready for prime time. But then, so up until the third quarter of that preseason game, I didn't have any critiques of how they handled this quarterback battle. It was actually, I mean, compared to what they did with Tebow last year, light years ahead. And I'm like, maybe they're taking this next maturity step in the direction of this franchise, and this is the right way to do it. Clearly, Itzig probably doesn't like Sanchez, wanted Geno Smith. He got every opportunity in the world. I know that everybody's thinking that Sanchez is Rex's guy, but Rex is coaching for his career. I mean, not just in the Jets Nation. I mean, if he falls on his face this year, it's going to be a long time before he gets another opportunity. So if Geno Smith comes out and looks fantastic and takes them down up and down the field, he was going to start Geno Smith. I have no doubt about that. He looked horrible. I'm like, okay, we get through that. Okay, we have our quarterback set. We know Mark Sanchez is going to start. If he falters, we'll see what Geno Smith brings us. Boom. And then the decision is made, let's run Mark Sanchez out there. He fumbles the first snap, typical Sanchez fashion.
Yep.
And you figure, okay, that was his one little shot, whatever it was. And then they bring him out again. And he makes a fantastic play. They made a fantastic play to complete the ball down the field, and he gets driven to the floor by Marvin Austin. And everybody's talking about, well, you know, he's got third-string linemen in front of him, but he's playing against third-string guys. Marvin Austin is a stud. I mean, he's the guy that came out of North Carolina, right? When he only fell in the draft because he had some questionable problems.
Yep.
But he's a stud. And drove him into the ground. He's hurt. Now, granted, it looks like he's going to be fine and probably play week one, but he's missing these last week and a half of practice leading up to that game, which is killer. So you have that. I mean, this is brutal. I mean, in what scenario did it make sense to have Mark Sanchez in that game?
Well, the first thing is, I'm not going to sit here and say that I was watching a preseason game, but I obviously saw and heard all the fallout about what happened with re-entering Sanchez in the game. On your first point, if you watched Geno Smith last year at West Virginia,
yeah,
he was a big college fan. In the first half of the season, he had like ungodly numbers. He was just unreal. And then in the second half, he couldn't hit a bull in the ass from anywhere.
Yeah.
And he struggled at various points. And then he started to wonder at that point, when he looked like he'd be a Heisman winner, was he a product of Dana Holgorsen's system? Just crazy spread it out, throw the ball, the inside option reads and all that stuff. And then just to that point, I agree with you in terms of, you have Sanchez, you traded up. How many spots did they trade up to get him?
They traded up. It wasn't a huge amount. Yeah, they had a pick in the early teens.
Right,
so you put
all those eggs in that basket,
mm-hmm.
and you're saying he's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't turned out that way. I know, mm-hmm. He's got an opportunity maybe this year to do something, change the opinion of him or whatever. But putting him back in the game, when I heard that, I was absolutely flabbergasted.
Inexcusable.
Because Rex... And again, you're the Jets fan here, but
and I'm a big Rex defender, as you know.
I know that, and I'm not a fan of his.
Yeah.
I think I'd like to play for him.
Yeah.
He comes across like that kind of guy, like he's fun in the locker room, dressing room, whatever. But putting Sanchez back in when you now are realizing that Smith is not ready, he may be ready down the line, but he's not right now. So Sanchez is going to be your guy.
Yeah.
And then you put him back into a preseason game, and then did he not tell people afterwards? He was trying to win.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Who the hell cares about that?
Exactly. And I genuinely believe that in his mind, it was a big game for them to win. A, it was against the Giants. B, I think he wanted to be at least 500 in the preseason. Like, those things matter to him. I think that last year, the complete ineptitude of their offense, where they didn't score until week four when McElroy came in there and scored, I think that weighed on him. Then you could say preseason games don't count, but to him, he's like, well, I heard about it all year long. Because he didn't score. If they don't matter, then why are you hounding me? And I think that all got into his head. And this is the first time, and I've been there's been individual decisions that I've disagreed with, but there's no head coach in the world. You're going to agree with every decision. I don't care if it's Bill Belichick.
Right.
There's times you're going to question him. But this is the first time where there is just no other side of the story. There's no argument for it. And then his answer just compounded the problem.
Yeah.
This was an important game. If it wasn't an important game, I wouldn't put him in there.
Well,
really? After seeing him, they should have put him in a freaking bubble after seeing Geno Smith and just say, look, buddy, you go over there. Somebody should get a massage.
Yeah.
They should get some half-naked girls running around, and he could do another little Vine video, and that's it. Put him in his little pedestal.
Yeah. Well, the two things. Number one was, I understand what you're saying, that you don't agree with everything every decision your coach makes, but the second thing that I saw was the press conference afterwards.
Yeah.
Where he was turning around and
he's making
all that nonsense. I mean, he looked like a buffoon.
Right.
And you look at that point like you should be coaching, and this is no disrespect to anybody that coaches Pop Warner, but you look like you should be a Pop Warner coach scolding your kids down the line after the game while in the end zone, like while they're eating orange slices.
Yeah.
You're the head coach of the New York Jets.
Childish.
You're turning your backside.
Yeah.
The guy in the media, they're all ravenous in New York because everybody knows the media. Now you're being a clown when you made an idiotic decision that no one can defend.
Own up to it.
It had to have like Tom Landry and Vince Lombardi turning over in their graves.
Yeah.
Imagine Lombardi doing that with Bart Starr. Or, like Shula doing that with Marino or stuff like that. It was, and then he just compounds it by looking like more of an idiot in front of the media, which to me was not as bad as the decision he made to put Sanchez back in, but you look stupid now. You look even dumber than you look putting Sanchez back in by not answering the questions, at least earnestly, talking to them about, I'm an idiot, I screwed up.
Yeah. No, I know. And that's we talk about it in all aspects of life, whether it's politics or sports or anything, but it's almost like the cover-up is worse than the problem. If he had and this is obviously not a cover-up, but his denial of the issue of him making a mistake made it that much worse. If he had come out there and say, you know what, guys, I felt it was important for Mark Sanchez's confidence to lead us on a drive, and you can't simulate that. If he had said that, we were down by a point, I thought putting him in this game would simulate what we need him to do in the fourth quarter of games. We knew he wasn't going to play next week anyway, so this was my last chance. You could buy that story. You know, you could disagree with it, but you could say, all right, there was some sort of football logic behind it.
Yeah.
But to say this was an important game is just idiotic and not true. And he knows it's not true.
Well, okay, I mean, if you can find me the Jets fan or even the Giants fan that cared whether or not their team won that game,
yeah,
I'll show you someone that knows nothing about football. Like, I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Because if the Vikes played the Packers in a preseason game,
you do get
game,
a cool Snoopy trophy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like no one cares. It's to get your players ready and assess talent and get your team ready to break out of camp and start the season. And now you're telling me that it mattered?
Yeah.
And that Sanchez, who, right, wrong, or indifferent, whether he's going to be good this year or not, he's your guy. Smith
yeah.
has handed him the job.
Oh, yeah.
And
just
now,
hand it to him on a
platter. Putting back in, I mean, you would have been better off putting, like, Ken O'Brien in out of the stands
just
or something like that.
Have Boomer come down. His
fat
ass
comes
down.
Get Boomer in there, man. But
yeah.
I don't know.
I agree with you. So then that happens, right? So now you're sitting there and you're like, we don't have a lot as Jets Nation to really root for. It's like, but, you know, okay, we have a healthy Mark Sanchez. Now that's out the window. And now we have an unhealthy Mark Sanchez who, even when he's healthy, is in the bottom 5 or 10 quarterbacks generously in the league. We have this now. There's this battle between Geno Smith and Matt Sims.
Yeah.
And that's a legitimate argument right now.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Sims, possibly being your starting opening day quarterback. And we'll get to the Buffalo Bills starting quarterback
yeah.
situation in a minute when Tony
God.
D wants to chat about that. But then as a Mets and Jets fan, you're like, okay, fine. Let's see, you know, I got 10 days to think about this or whatever, you know, 2 weeks until the next game. So we're going to wait. I got the Mets. I got Matt Harvey and all this. And then this
yeah.
story breaks. And, of course, Francesa has to call into his own show because he has to break the story. Can we stop pretending that it makes that much of a difference that we found out from Mike Francesa 20 minutes before the rest of the world did? Like, what are we supposed to do here? Just like, okay, bow down to this guy because he found out 20 minutes. If it was like some crazy, like the Manti Te'o story, breaking that story is a breaking story because
yeah.
nobody else is going to get it. There was a press conference scheduled for an hour later.
Yeah.
Let's not act like you broke a story because you found out 20 minutes before anybody else did. Let's not give this guy a cookie for that. Am I wrong about that? I mean, I don't understand. I mean, maybe because we're new to the media here with what we're doing.
Yeah, we're getting our feet wet.
Maybe we will someday be very excited because we find out something 18 seconds before it hits Twitter. But that's how excited he was. He had to call in from his vacation of, you know, the summer of Mike to call in to break this story. And, oh, well, we got to give Mike Francesa credit. He broke it 15 minutes before anybody else, before Eddie C. got on and broke it. Thanks, Mike. So we find out that this guy's got a partial tear in his UCL, which immediately you're thinking Tommy John. Now, the Mets are obviously, because they're the Mets, they're going to wait this thing out and wait to the last possible minute and just ruin this guy for a season and a half instead of a season. But the initial reaction is all blame game. Obviously, you want to blame. And the Mets bring it on themselves to an extent because their press conference was all over the place. You had Sandy Alderson saying that he had experienced some discomfort earlier on, and they've known about it. Terry Collins saying this is the first he's heard of it. Then Matt Harvey saying he's had some discomfort. So what's the true story? We don't know. But that all being said, I don't know if you saw my article. I wrote an article about the blame game. And
I did.
And I, at the end of the day, I don't think there's blame really to be had here in the Mets organization. I mean, I don't care, and I hate Terry Collins as a coach. Might be a nice guy. And I just called for this guy to be fired.
I didn't know that until I read the article.
Yeah.
My
first article for the site ever, when we opened the website, was called 80 Games, and it was because, you know, they had just fired Jerry Manuel. He had 79 wins, and that was in a season where Reyes was hurt, Beltran was hurt, Johan was hurt. All these guys were hurt. He was able to manage 79 games. So this guy better win 80 games if you want me to believe in him. He's never won 80 games, never sniffed 80 games. And all he's done is collapse every single season. And all he's happened under his tenure is young players regress under him. Guys come up and they do, you know, they're successful coming out of Wally Backman's team, and they just continuously regress until the point they have to go back down to the AAA and figure out how to play baseball again.
Right.
And you look at Ruben Tejada, Ike Davis, Lucas Duda, the rest. So I've never been a fan of his. So I would love to blame him, but I don't have any blame for him here because he's not a doctor. You know, if a doctor's telling you that this is just – I mean, there's aches and pains in every pitcher in August throughout baseball. So if he had any inclination that this was a serious injury, he's not crazy. He's not stupid. As much as he might – you know, I might question his decisions as a manager, he's not that dumb to just risk it for what? I mean,
right.
They're not in any race or anything. And it's the same thing. I mean, I heard people arguing against Sandy Alderson that because he didn't have a strong – you know, a team behind him, this guy, you know, Matt Harvey felt like he had to take the team on his shoulders and was trying extra hard, and that's why I hurt his arm. It's just insane because any starting pitcher is going to give it their all every time they pitch.
Right. I just think that the situation was, when it first happened, it was a knee-jerk response. Everybody wanted to blame someone. You know, and you and I were talking before we went on the air where I said, you know, my first reaction was, like, good God, you know, the Mets fans.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how many friggin' things can go wrong when you see, like, Santana throws your first no-hitter in franchise history, next thing he wakes up the next day and his arm's next to him on the pillow. You know what I mean? Like, he's done now. You don't even know where he is.
Yeah.
And I just looked at it from that perspective. I haven't even delved into who I would blame, but you do wonder about the chain of communication within the organization, which is your ace,
yeah,
the bedrock of your organization going forward, didn't, am I right to say he didn't communicate that to anybody?
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't communicate the discomfort to anyone. Is that what,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I don't know how much sense that makes, but, you know, we'll see where that goes going forward. It's clearly a huge blow to the Mets, to Matt Harvey and what goes on. But as we'll see, and as we'll get into with Tommy John, you know, you're always going to have guys having Tommy John surgery. A third of the league have had Tommy John surgery, and, you know, guys bounce back from that. But I want to take the direction of this show into a little bit more positive note. I mean, we're over here starting the show negative. We're talking about the hate mail we've gotten. We're talking about, you know, Geno Smith running the end zone, Matt Sanchez, Mark Sanchez, the rest. We had a big story here in the tri-state area, specifically Fairfield County, where we do our show, and that's the Westport Little League team. And, I mean, you go along for a ride with a Little League team from your area, it's one of those moments where you're hoping to get one of those every generation. We've had a bunch of them. We've had, you know, Fairfield, we had Trumbull when we were kids, and this year it was Westport. And what's interesting is, you know, you're from Darien, I'm from Norwalk, and, you know, you're Westport's a rival.
Right.
But when you have a town that you grew up playing against and all that, and they're playing in this, there's nothing bigger. So we are lucky to be joined on the program with a player from that team, really a hero right now in Fairfield County, and I believe that's Charlie Roof. Are you on the show right now with us, Charlie?
Yes, I am.
Charlie, good to hear from you, buddy. Congratulations on one heck of a run. You know, we were all just here in Norwalk pulling for you, which is something great. And I'll be honest with you, you know, Staples High wins a lot of state championships, and I'm not pulling for Staples High, but I was pulling for you guys, so I appreciate it. So let me ask you this, Charlie. So, you know, you guys clearly played together for a while, you know.
Yeah.
At what point during this season did you guys realize you had something special and you could make a real run? I mean, every Little Leaguer thinks that they have this dream of playing in the Little League World Series and winning it. But at what point, was there a moment where you guys looked at each other and said, hey, we got a real shot at this thing?
Well, we knew all season, but we didn't take it for granted. We just took it one day at a time and just kept practicing and kept working hard. And well, that's where we end up.
Yeah, I mean, that's just fantastic. That's really the way to approach it, is just one game at a time. And you guys rattled off 20 straight wins in that tournament, which is amazing. Now, when I played in the league, we always had these crazy superstitions. We had this kid, Enrique Valentin, used to bring this cane to a game and hang it on the fence. And when we were in a rally, he would whack it against the fence. Did you guys have anybody on the team or as a team together, did you guys have any crazy superstitions for any of these games?
Yeah, we did. All season until we went to the regionals, we ate pasta at our manager's house every day before a game, and we would ride in the same car, same seats, and play the same songs.
Well, there every you go. Game. I mean, that's baseball right there. I mean, I used to eat a Big Mac before every game. Now I'm a little overweight, Charlie, so learn from me, buddy.
Charlie, this is Dan Santarelli here, bud, and I got a question for you, man. What is it like at 12 years old, or any age for that matter, to walk out there at Lomedy Stadium in front of 25, 30, 35,000 fans? What is that like?
Well, it was nerve-wracking at first, but, you know, after the first pitch, you kind of, you know, just wait for the ball, and it's like any other game.
Yeah.
It's also very nerve-wracking because you're on ESPN with millions of people watching, and it's not just people there. So.
Right. Dude, and I see, dude, listen, I'm watching one of the games, and it shows you guys, like, you know, you were talking to the Washington team, and you were mixing it up with other guys, and when I used to play, we used to want to try to hurt each other, you know? But you guys look like you were having a lot of fun. Was there a lot of hanging out? Did you guys get to know guys from California and Washington? And
yeah, in a way. You know, you play ping pong with a couple other teams. I know some of the kids on my team played ping pong with some of the Chinese Taipei kids, and a lot of kids trade pins, and that's how you get to know a lot of kids from the other teams. And yeah, that's pretty much all the interaction. And you might go swimming with some of them, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, but that's still pretty cool. I mean, we used to play in tournaments and stuff in college, and, you know, you avoided the other teams, like, to all in. So that's cool that there's some camaraderie there. Now, you mentioned playing, knowing and that you're playing on ESPN in front of millions of people, and that leads me to my next question. I mean, did you feel, like, were you insulated in the Williamsport bubble where, you know, you knew it was a big deal, but you didn't really realize the impact? I mean, all across Connecticut, there's bars and restaurants and family rooms full of people just rooting for you guys and you know, watching every pitch. Did you get a sense in the moment of what kind of story it was throughout the state of Connecticut and throughout all of New England?
Yeah. At first, I thought it was just Westport that was really happy and going crazy. But then when I got home, I realized the whole state of Connecticut was watching all around the state, and it was really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be amazing. Now, my next question is, do you play any other sports? And if so, is baseball your favorite? And basically getting at, I don't want to see a lacrosse stick in your hand in a couple years here, Charlie, all right?
No, not at all. Not a chance.
All right, so
I play football and basketball, but my favorite and main sport is baseball. And I like baseball the most, too.
I'll tell you, as a pitcher, you got to worry about Staples High because that's a short porch in left field. Our listeners might not know about Staples High, but I remember hitting a couple long balls at that park. That's a tough pitcher's park, buddy. So keep the ball down when you're in high school. I'll tell you that. So my last question.
I'll remember that.
Yeah, that's my one advice for you from the Tri-State Sports guys. My last question is, I mean, throughout the whole run, from the start of the summer when you guys, you know, you made this travel team and you started your run through Connecticut and then through New England, what's the most memorable moment of the whole thing? What was the moment where 50 years from now, when you're an old man sitting there talking to your grandkids, you're going to remember the most of this whole run you made?
It'll probably be that, you know, after we won the regional final game, the excitement we all had and just shocked that, you know, I mean, I had no idea how, like, I didn't think it was going to be impossible, but I thought it was going to be really hard. It wasn't as hard as I thought, and I was just really excited. And the second one would be probably making it to the U.S. final, also known as the national championship, and that was just amazing, too, because that California team is really good, and I'm really happy we took them into 9 innings on Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, that team was really good, but you guys were really good, too, and, you know, it's going to be exciting to watch you guys. I mean, I'll be honest, in a few years when you guys are playing at Staples together, I don't know how hard I'm going to be rooting for you when you're playing Norwalk High, but I wish you the best. You guys seem like a really good group of kids. Your coach seems like a great guy, and I wish you nothing but the best. So stay in touch. We'd love, when you're winning state championships, you can come back on the show. All right, buddy?
All right, thank you so much.
Charlie, thanks a lot, bud.
All right, that's Charlie Roof, player on the, runner-up, second-best Little League team in the entire country.
That could be, seriously, a future Hall of Famer we just spoke
about. Well, exactly. Right, when you look at, you know, every time you watch these games, and they're always exciting to watch.
Oh, yeah.
It's just littered with guys that make the pros, you know. And I'm sure there's going to be somebody on that team. There's going to be a bunch of those guys on that team that go play college ball and go get drafted and this and that. And, you know, it could be him. You know, I mean, this guy, you know, you get something like that that all of a sudden turns baseball from being a hobby to being a passion, which clearly all those kids that are on that roster, it's now their passion. You know, sky's the limit for these kids.
We just, like you said, we got to keep them away from lacrosse.
Keep the lacrosse together.
And I know you play football, but, you know, stay with baseball.
He didn't seem very interested in lacrosse.
No, that was that's the best answer. No, he interrupted me. Yeah. I had a boy, Charlie, speak up. He didn't want anything to do with it. That's fantastic. Well, that's Charlie Roof, pitcher for the Westport Little League team. Great story. We're going to take a quick commercial break, get into some football stuff. Got Tommy John coming up with the Tri-State Sports guys. Be right back.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. It's Mike DePalma, Tony D, and Dan Santarella here with the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live. If you do want to tune in, call in. It's 347-637-2306. We're going to get to some college football. We've been criticized heavily for not talking college football. That and NASCAR, we will never talk about NASCAR.
Never.
But in tennis, maybe we'll get into some tennis now. We had a local guy retire this week. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But you're a big college football guy, Dan.
Love it.
Which is awesome. I don't dislike it. People think that I don't dislike it. I don't got time in my day to follow too many sports. And I don't want to come on here and pretend I know about it. I don't know about it. So I want you to give us some stuff. I mean, just give us like a little – what are some storylines to follow, some teams to follow? What are we looking for in the 2013 season?
Well, I think the first biggest story is the Johnny Manziel situation down at A&M, and I saw just before we came on.
He brought the hammer down.
Yeah, they gave him that half-game suspension against the Rice Owls.
I got 30 minutes against the Rice Owls. Why even do anything?
I honestly don't
want to steal this segment from you, but what are they even thinking? Why even do anything? After all of this, has there ever been a more anticlimactic verdict
than
a 30-minute suspension against Rice?
The fact of the matter is, if me, you, and Tony D went around your neighborhood right now and found eight guys, we might be able to be tied with Rice at halftime.
Yeah, we can get it. Yeah.
That's why they did it. If they had Bama like they do in their second game.
I could still sling it, dude.
I believe it. You look ready right now. But, I mean, really, I thought it was a bogus penalty with him. And I think, to me, there's a lot of stories, like, can Army beat Navy finally? But the second one I would have would be, can Bama do a three-peat?
Is there any? What's in their way of doing it? I mean, I know they had that offensive line where they graduated some guys. They lost Eddie Lacy, but I'm sure there's a school full of running backs at that school.
Well,
I don't think Eddie Lacy's going to be a problem to replace.
No,
right?
T.J. Yeldon was essentially the quote-unquote backup last year, and every time he would spell Lacy, they didn't skip a beat. I think he averaged 6 yards a carry or whatever the heck he did.
Sounds about right.
The defense has a lot of holes that they're replacing, but the solace you take in that is that I don't think there's a better coach in the country than Nick Saban. I mean, you can get an argument from Buckeyes fans about Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
You can get an argument. But in terms of Saban, I think there's, you know, that's landmines down there in the SEC. Any week you can step into one. But I think he'll be ready going into Kyle Field at A&M in the second week of the season. I think it's September 14th.
Oh, they're going to bury A&M, dude.
I had a discussion with our mutual friend Tim from Norwalk.
Oh, Timmy. Still hitting seeds up the middle.
Oh, he's hitting bullets. But Timmy told me Bama's got no shot going into A&M. And I told him.
Auburn fan.
I know that. But I told him Bama will be laying.
That's no shot.
But none. They'll be laying points. Bama will be laying points. And Timmy wanted to tell me. But I love that kid. You know, I give him credit. War Eagle. He's a big Auburn fan.
Listen, I like that he took a stance and he stuck with it. He didn't toe the line here.
Right.
He just was like, they got no shot.
Right.
You're going to make a prediction. There ain't no prediction. It ain't going to be a close game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But, you know, you look at the SEC, and it's just so filled with talent. You look at the SEC West, and you say to yourself, you know, Bama's the cream of the crop. Then you look at a team like A&M. And I think, really, as I look at LSU, that the only thing that keeps me off the Tiger bandwagon is the schedule they have. And I was looking today, and I saw that they have UGA and both Mississippi schools and Bama on the road.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, so, you know, and then they have Florida A&M in an out-of-conference game with TCU. And that's an LSU team that a lot of pundits are saying might have as much talent as Bama.
Yeah.
But then you look at them and you go, at Death Valley, they're nearly unbeatable.
Yeah.
And they go on the road, and you're just not going to find a schedule like that in the Big Ten, in the Big 12, in the Pac-12. You're not going to find any league where you got to go do that.
Now, let me ask you about Georgia. I mean, is Georgia going to be formidable again this year? I mean, clearly, they were in any other conference last year. They're playing in the national championship game.
Yeah. They almost beat Bama.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, they were the second best team in the country, and I'm a Notre Dame fan.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. But, I mean, are they restocked and ready to go this year? Tell me a little bit about Georgia. I mean, I don't know anything about them.
Georgia, I've always been a detractor of Mark Richt, kind of just wondering, you know, can they get him over the hump? Can he do this? That's their head coach for anybody that doesn't follow the Bulldogs. They have an excellent quarterback, Aaron Murray, who I think is a dark horse to win the Heisman. And he's 1,500 passing yards away from breaking the all-time SEC record in passing yards. And he's a fantastic player. They have a couple of really good backs. Their D's only returning a few players. But the good news for them this year is they dodged Bama. and they have LSU at home. So you look at them in the SEC East, which you could argue either way, but you look at in the East, you're getting your Kentuckys, your Vanderbilts, or rebuilding Tennessee team. You obviously have Jadeveon Clowney with his South Carolina team. And Florida, to me, is always dangerous. I'm not in love with Will Muschamp as a coach, but they always have such talent right in their backyard there that you know they're always reloading.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about them.
All right, you got anything else? I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, in our my former co-host, the fifth Beatle, he gave his five bold predictions. He says Notre Dame's not even going to be a 500 team this year, sub-500 team. So I think it's a little aggressive. Now, I think that defense is still legit. Up front, they're still – I mean, I know they lost Teo, but they still got – what's that guy named Truitt? They still got some other big guys up front. I think that their defense and their defensive line specifically is going to be good enough to really – I mean, they're going to win 7-8 games, right?
I
don't even know the schedule, but
far be it for me to disagree with O. But I'm going to say this: they have trips to the Big House in Ann Arbor. They got to go to Stanford, who I might be out on a limb here, but I think Stanford's a national title contender. And they have Michigan State, Oklahoma, and SC coming to South Bend. And you know, I got to say one thing: I've always been an Notre Dame hater. Because they won't play Army every year. Because their stadium's not big enough, which is ridiculous. But can Notre Dame please stop playing all the service academies?
Yeah.
Can you please? I mean, really. If Bama went to
America's
do that,
team, dude.
They would shoot Nick Saban. They would shoot him.
Can you imagine if Nick Saban came up with that idea? Like, you know, we got to get out to the Air Force.
Yeah. I mean, Tuscaloosa, seriously, the place they'd be throwing grenades at people in that city. Because it's ridiculous. And so I think with those two, they got Pittsburgh. They're 30-point favorites this week at home against Temple.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just I think they can win 8 games. If they won 7, I wouldn't be shocked. But I don't know if I see them as a 6-6 team. I think they're a little bit better than that, personally.
Yeah, a little bit better than
you
that.
Know?
Well, all right. Well, I mean, we're going to actually do a lot more college football stuff throughout the season. Next week we'll go through some games. I mean, typically, is there any big games week one? Typically, week one's kind of a snooze fest, but sometimes there's some big games. I know there was that big LSU-Oregon game last year. I think it was week two, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything big, that worth watching, anything that has any kind of implications on a,
You got you got Georgia and Clemson.
Yeah.
Which there's a lot of people saying Clemson's going to win the ACC because they have a phenomenal
offense.
My brother's
a big Clemson fan. God knows why, but he's a big Clemson fan.
And a lot of love to your brother, but I don't see in the ACC – I'm a big believer in defense, and Florida State has unequivocally the best defense in that conference. I don't even see an argument against that. I believe they're going to overtake Clemson. I love Taj Boyd. He's a phenomenal quarterback for Clemson there. It's a tough place to play, but so is Doak Campbell down in Tallahassee. I like the Noles there, but I actually think Georgia's going to beat Clemson this week.
Is that right?
It's not a sleeper pick or anything like that, but, you know. And I think Bama's playing – I think they're playing V-Tech or something.
Oh, is that right?
Am I right with that?
That'd be an entertaining game to watch.
Might be right with that. Yeah, but I think Bama's
like
19.
So there is reason to watch college football other than just the fact that you're just excited to watch football.
Yeah, I love it. You know why? Because I love seeing the different offenses. You know, you can run the option. There's the pageantry. There's the rivalries.
Yeah.
I love all that. I love the Civil War every year with Oregon and Oregon State.
NCAA football, to me, was always better than Madden.
Because of the playbook.
Because of the playbook.
Yeah.
And you go to selecting your schedule and all that was cool because you got to go and run, you know, play against a triple option team or whatever it was. So I always have more fun doing that. And I agree with you. I mean, it doesn't make sense that I'm not a big fan, but I don't know. Before we go to break, we do have to take a break, but we got a caller on line two, I believe. Is this Franco? Hello, you're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this? Cowboy.
Mike Paul.
Hey, Cowboy. Sorry about that. We had our lines mixed up there. Cowboy, line one. Cowboy, what's going on, brother?
Nothing. I'm just calling in. I was actually just wanted to listen because I'm on the road, and I wanted to hear the Tommy John interview. So the only access I had was to listen on the radio, and I didn't realize you guys were going to call me on.
Well, hey, I'm glad to have you on, buddy. Well, he's coming up pretty shortly. We're going to have him on probably within the next 5 or 10 minutes. So hang on the line,
and
know what? After the interview, we'll unmute you. We'll have you come back on it, and you could tell us how bad we were.
Maybe I'll get an anonymous email.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody wants to hide behind their email. All right, brother. That's the great Kevin Ireland, a.k.a. Cowboy, bartender down at O'Neill's, author of Pub Talk. Hopefully we're getting another Pub Talk this week because that one got into some good discussion. So, all right, Tone, let's go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're gonna have we're gonna get into just a little bit more Matt Harvey stuff, and then we got Tommy John coming on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be back in about 60 seconds.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minute chess.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys, thanks for tuning in. The number to call if you do want to call in is 347-637-2306. As always, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Tri-State Sports Guys. On Twitter, we're Tri-State_Sports. And our website, tristatesportsguys.com. Now, you know, we got into a little bit about Matt Harvey before, you know, we had the great interview with Charlie Roof. But, you know, what's interesting to me about the Mets is that they sat there and they stockpiled all these pitchers, right?
Right.
And that was going to be their MO, that they were going to use them. And the question was whether that was going to be as trade bait, like we need them, you know, to go out and add a big bat. I don't see how that's really happening. I mean, in this day and age, you tend to lock up your players far before arbitration. So, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that even the Marlins would go out and trade Giancarlo Stanton. I'm not an even big Stanton guy. I don't want them to go out and spend big money on him. I look at his swing, and I'm like, this guy's got big power, but he's a 230 hitter in my mind. Carlos Gonzalez I really like, but, I mean, what's the motivation for the Rockies to trade him until they really desperately need to? Why would they trade him right now? He's got a couple years left on his deal at a relatively controllable number. So, you know, how are they going to get better in the future? What is their plan for 2014? Well, it was based on these young arms and being able to add some bats. And now you wonder, are they going to have to add an arm, you know, going forward? What was interesting to me about what happened in the aftermath of the Matt Harvey interview was the day after it happens, news breaks, and now all of a sudden they decide they're going to trade Marlon Byrd and John Buck. Now, I was a proponent of keeping those guys at the deadline unless you were going to get something that blew you away, because I am of the thought that you do need to carry some momentum into the next season. You look at what the Orioles did a couple years ago leading up into last season, and that's just to me, that's a real tangible thing that helps teams that are trying to rebuild. So I don't have a problem with him trading now. I just wonder if is there any correlation, do you think, behind the Harvey injury and all of a sudden now they're like, okay, now we can make the deal. If that's the case, then that makes no sense. They were out of it anyway.
Right.
The timing of it just seems weird that it had to happen right now. I mean, granted, I know you have to do it in August, but do you think there's a correlation between the Harvey injury and now they have to make this trade for a 19-year-old 150-pound second baseman?
To be honest, I mean, I don't know that there's a correlation. There very well could be. I mean, I don't see it, but I think it was just them making a move. I don't like the message it sends to signing veterans and solid players in the future that if this stuff goes bad, you get rid of everybody.
Yeah.
That's my take. I mean, well, we have a very special guest tonight, and we're here on the Tucci Lumber Hotline. And we have a 288-game winner on the phone and a four-time All-Star, easy for me to say, Tommy John. Tommy, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. You?
I'm fantastic. We're really proud. I'm really happy to have you tonight, bud. The first thing I want to ask is you're kind of known for the Tommy John surgery and not so much as the great pitcher you were. I know for a fact, when I told my dad we were having you on, he was excited. He's a Yankee fan. He was so excited. So I was just wondering, man, does that bother you at all that you're not known for how good you really were?
No, not really. It's the sign of the times. You know, probably if you go back into history, there's some politicians back in the 40s, 50s, 60s that people don't remember. Oh, yeah, who was he now? And, you know, he was a good governor, good senator or whatever. And it's just a sign of the times. Kids know Clayton Kershaw, and they know of Cliff Lee and all this. And, you know, Tommy John pitched 40 years ago.
Right. You see guys, though, you see guys like Bert Blyleven, who's a guy you have one more win than him, and a guy like Jim Cott that I always felt that you three should all be in the Hall of Fame. Is that something that ever crosses your mind, or how often do you think about stuff like that?
Only when people bring it up. I have a creed, and it is I don't really worry about things I can't control. Now, I worry about my golf swing. I worry about my putting because I can control those. But getting into the Hall of Fame, I have nothing to do with that. If I get in, it'll be a great day. If I don't get in, I'll still be Tommy John from Terre Haute, Indiana.
I mean, I worry about my golf swing too, Tommy, but I don't have 288 wins, bud.
Well, those 288 wins don't help me on the golf course, that I can tell you.
Tommy, it's
because
it's
if they did, I'd use them every day.
Remember them. All right, Tommy, it's Mike DePalma here. Thanks for being on the show. You know, the story here, I mean, I'm a big Met fan. We talk a lot of Mets here. Obviously, is the Matt Harvey thing. My first question to you about that is, you know, different franchises have different ways of approaching their young stars. You have what the Nationals did last year with Strasburg, shutting him down, which we criticized here. You had the Yankees with the Jabba rules when Jabba Chamberlain was coming up. And then you have the flip side of that when you had, you know, the way Dusty Baker handled Mark Pryor, where he let him throw 130 pitches game in and game out. And really, there seems to be no rhyme or reason to what works and what doesn't work is to preserving a young arm. I mean, look what the Mets did. They didn't coddle him, but they also did, you know, give him a rest when they thought he needed a rest. So my question is there anything that you – I mean, you probably know more about this than anybody, you know, having gone through the surgery and being the first one to do it. Is there anything that these organizations can do to prevent these kind of injuries, or is it just the fact that throwing a baseball is very stressful on your elbow?
If Fred Wilpon and Sandy Alderson want to hire me, I can come up with a throwing program that I will 100% guarantee that the pitchers will not get hurt.
Is that right? Well, what is that throwing program? I mean, is it taking pressure off the elbow, or is it a more of a program in between starts, or what are you talking about?
The throwing program is you don't pitch.
What I'm saying is,
if you pitch, whether you do what Dusty did to Mark Pryor, but if you look at Mark Pryor's throwing motion, he had basically the same throwing motion as Strasburg. It was not a clean motion. Here in the last 20, 25 years, the motions have gotten all screwed up. Tom House is a big proponent of getting into the inverted W, where your elbows get up above your head and you throw the ball like that. And back when I was coming up, all I was taught is get the ball out of your glove as early as possible, get your arm down and around and up as quickly as possible, and then your arm should be up when your front foot hits. But that's not taught now. That's not taught, because if you lag a little bit and you get that way and then you flip your arm, you can essentially throw the ball harder. But if you do that, and Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood was the same way. Kerry Wood threw what I called, had an upside-down motion. Steven Strasburg has an upside-down motion. I haven't really seen Matt Harvey pitch that much. But if you look at guys, Cliff Lee has an absolutely beautiful motion, I think. He stays back, he gets his arm up, he strides toward home plate, and he throws in. Cliff Lee throws 220, 225 innings and doesn't break down. I just think that, one, you go out and you sign these guys out of college, and you pay them millions of dollars, and they've got crappy motions, they probably will break down somewhere down the line. I know the Yankees had the jobber rules, but the Yankees screwed him up when he got to the big leagues by pitching him out of the bullpen, then they were going to start him, then they got in the bullpen, then they were starting him, now he's out of the bullpen. And the best thing for Jeff Chamberlain to do is at the end of this season, go someplace like the California Angels or the Dodgers or someplace far away from New York and get out there and throw like Jeff Chamberlain did when he came out of Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, this is Mike again. Now, there's a question I have to follow up with. I mean, you look at Jeremy Hefner for the Mets, and if you're not following the Mets, you probably don't know much about him, but he tweaked his motion.
Right, mid-season. I don't. I have no idea who he is. I don't have any idea. Who is he?
So Jeremy Hefner was the number four starter for the Mets this year, started out, and he was atrocious, was giving up 3-4 home runs a game. They tweaked his motion where he was a little bit more deceptive, and he did a little bit more of that slinging motion you're talking about, and he did increase his velocity. He had some success, and then after 7 or 8 starts, he had elbow issues, and today he had Tommy John surgery. So my question is, when you have a guy, like you said, you know, you could see a guy in college, and that's how they throw. If a guy is ready to be drafted, is it too late for him to make adjustments? Because,
yes.
you know,
yes.
you get to the level,
yes.
you've already been
to what you're going to say. Your motion when you're ready, whether you're in high school or college, your motion is your motion. And
so
if you've got to radically change it, you're screwed. You're screwed. And I think they've got to get these scouts to look at guys better. And, you know, you look at a Steven Strasburg that's got a great arm and all this. But he was an accident waiting to happen. And it was either going to be his shoulder or his elbow, and the weakest link blew, which was his elbow, and he had Tommy John surgery. And you know, if you hold guys back, and I don't say you throw them to the wolves, but I say that if a guy can pitch, he can pitch, and yeah, the longer he pitches, probably the more chance he's going to have of hurting his arm, but. You can't baby him and say, oh, well, you're going to pitch this week, and next week you're going to rest, and the next week you're going to pitch, and next week you're going to rest. One, the guy will never get any consistency. Secondly, he'll never build any arm strength. Thirdly, I think these guys need to do more throwing. They spend a lot of time in the weight room lifting weights, doing their bands, riding their bicycles, doing all this stuff. They need to get out on the mound more and throw the ball. And that's what you do when you pitch, and you don't lift weights when you pitch, you throw.
Tommy, that leads perfectly. This is Dan Santarelli again. That leads perfectly into my next question, which was I had heard an interview at the great Braves pitching coach there, Leo Mazzoni, gave a few years ago where he said – he always believed in having his pitchers throw multiple times in between starts. And kind of to your
Absolutely.
Point, they needed to throw a lot more, sort of along the lines of they're coddling these young pitchers that are coming up, you know, through the farm system. Do you see that as just being the way it is? Is that can that prevent some of the arm injuries that's happened to the guys that need Tommy John surgery?
Well, it's a matter of which comes first, the chicken or the egg. You sign these guys to millions of dollars. You bring them through the minor leagues. They get to the big leagues, and no longer can they be coddled. I mean, you know, you're at the big leagues. People are paying $152, $300 for a seat. You want to see somebody go out there and compete. Well, Leo was absolutely right. All of his guys threw at least 2, maybe 3 times off the mound between starts. They threw a lot down there with the Braves. Now, Leo Mazzoni was a proponent of the late Johnny Sane, pitching coach for the Tigers and the White Sox, and he pitched with the Yankees, pitched with the Braves, Spahn and Say, Sane and Pray for Rain. And what Johnny did is he said, you should do less running and more throwing, and you'll be a better pitcher. And I never bought into that. I said, you know, he's full of crap. And I thought there's only so many bullets in your arm. And when you used them up, you used them up. And you went back home and you sold used cars. But when I had my injury, the only way we knew back then is to get your arm strengthened was to throw a baseball. So I started throwing a baseball. And I threw it 6 days a week out of seven. And I found the worst days I had throwing was Monday and Tuesday. The best days I had were Friday and Saturday. And all of a sudden I started saying, geez, you know, Johnny Sane was right. The more I'm throwing the ball, the better my arm feels. And I pitched 13 years after surgery, and I don't know how many starts I made, but I never missed a start in the 13 years, and I won 164 games after surgery. That's two games less than Sandy Koufax won in his entire career. So obviously we did something right as archaic as our processes were back then.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, I think you make a good point. I mean, you know, throwing there's no way to strengthen the muscles in the arm that cause you to throw, because there are unique muscles that are only used for throwing. I mean, the rotator cuff and all that, but and the muscles in the elbow. Now, when we get back to like Matt Harvey, I mean, the guy's got a partial tear in his UCL, and the Mets want to play this waiting game and see if it'll heal in itself. And I'm of the opinion that, look, it's just a ticking time bomb here. If you've got this partial tear, like you said, I mean, it's a stressful thing on his arm. I don't see the downside of we want to have the surgery now. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you think?
Here's the thing. If you have the surgery now, he's going to miss all of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
If you wait a month or 6 weeks, he's still going to miss all of 2014. So time's on your side now. You know, now, if this would have happened in April, yeah, you would want to say, well, maybe we should have it done now, and then he'll be back for maybe the last half of the season. But it's not. It happened almost to September. So you can take the time, see if it's going to come back, and if it doesn't, then you go have Tommy John surgery, and he misses all of 2014. He's ready to pitch by October, November. Oh, there's no baseball then. Okay. But he's ready to pitch, and he's ready by next spring training, and he goes on, and he pitches for the next 7-8 years for the Mets and has good years.
Tommy, in regards to Harvey, he doesn't seem to have any kind of violent windup or anything like that. He obviously throws really hard. You know a lot more about pitching than I ever will. I'm just wondering, is it a predisposed type of thing or for guys that throw hard, or is it just something that is a freak accident?
It's a violent action, throwing is, and obviously the harder you throw, the more violence in the shoulder and elbow. And, you know, some guys are lucky, and they don't, you know, they're not, they don't have injury. Don Sutton was never injured in all of his years with the Dodgers and Angels and Brewers and all that. He pitched, he went every time. And I don't ever recall Don ever being on the disabled list. Well, did he do any strengthening or whatever? No. Did he run? Yeah, we ran a lot and we threw a lot, but you know, it's just he was blessed with good genes, and you know, I just think that I think that you can clean motions up a bit and make them a little more conducive to stress on the arm or less stress on the arm. But you're not going to take it away. It's some guys are going to break, some won't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and that's been what we've been saying on the show. I mean, I think, you know, everybody wants to point the finger at whether it's Terry Collins or Sandy Alderson. And I think in this instance, you know, it's an injury. It stinks. And everybody, as Americans, we always want to find somebody to blame. But I don't think there's anybody to blame on this. And, you know, maybe, like you said, there could have been some tweaks.
You sound like Alex Rodriguez. You sound like Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, jeez. That's all I need. Thanks, Tommy. Well, the only other question I have for you, Tommy, is talk me through a little bit of the rehab process after the surgery. I mean, for you to be the first one to go through it, it must have been, I mean, a little scary to be the first one to do it. But, I mean, are you reteaching yourself how to throw? Are you, and then is there a all of a sudden aha moment where you say, finally, I can let it go? Or is it just this daily grind? Talk a little bit about that. I mean, is it all of a sudden? I mean, these guys, the success rate of the surgery is 90%. So it definitely works. But,
yeah.
I mean, is there a moment during this rehab where you start to think, I'm never going to be able to throw again? Or walk me through that process.
Well, it's just you've got when you're operated on, you come back and the surgery, they won't let you throw a ball, whether it was when I had my arm done in 74 or whether Matt Harvey has his done now. You wait 16 weeks. It was 16 weeks back then. It's 16 weeks now. And then you start throwing a baseball. And I started throwing to my wife and I threw to my neighbor because my thought process was if I throw to somebody that really can't catch the ball, I'm not going to be apt to overthrow. So I just sit out there and play catch like you're doing with a little kid. You know, you just play catch. And I played catch and I threw until my arm got tired. And then I quit. And the next day I threw again until my arm got tired. And the next day I threw again. My arm may have gotten tired or sooner or later. It didn't make any difference. When I got down to spring training with the Dodgers, I threw against a wall. I took six baseballs with me, and I went out to this wall, and I threw against them like you were when you were a kid. I threw the ball, went over, fielded it, picked it up, threw it back on the wall, picked it up, threw it back on the wall, backhanded the ball, came up, threw it over, you know, again. And that's what I did 6 days a week. And, you know, yeah, I did strengthening exercises in between, and I ran, but that's all I did. And it was about, and I knew, see, I had elbow surgery done in after the 72 season. And I knew when I came back in 73, I felt good, but I wasn't throwing the ball well. And I had to convince myself that my arm was fully healed. And when I did that, then I started throwing the ball like Tommy John. So I knew when I had the big surgery done in 74, that when I was coming back in 75, I had to convince myself that I could throw without any pain. And it wasn't until about All-Star break of the 1975 season that all of a sudden I started to throw a ball and I started throwing it harder and harder and harder. It was in Pittsburgh. And our bullpen catcher, after we got done, he came up and he said, wow. He said, that's the best. He said, that was outstanding. And then from then on, my fastball kept getting better and better. And I never started spinning a curveball. I knew I was going to pitch. I pitched in a ball game 1 year, one day after surgery. So I pitched September 26, 1975. It was in the instructional league. And I never started working on a curveball until 1st of September. And I just started spinning my curveball because it made no difference. If I had all my pitches, if I couldn't throw my fastball and I couldn't throw it where I wanted and I couldn't throw with the spin on it and make the ball sink, all the other pitches were moot. So I just worked on my main pitch, which was my fastball. And, I mean, when I was pitching, I could get out of bed on Christmas Day. And you hand me a baseball, and I could throw a curveball for you. It's just when I learned how to throw a curveball at 13, 14 years of age, all of a sudden I picked it up, and it was with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, your story is one of those like great American baseball stories, Tommy. And I, you know, it's fantastic. You know, your career you had after that surgery and being the first one to do it. And the only other little small story I'll tell, and I debated with Dan whether I should tell you this. When I was in college, we had a recruit, and this kid was a big time recruit, and we told this kid that Tommy John gets a commission on every time somebody has one of those surgeries. And this poor kid remembered it and believed us. And then he goes home and tells his parents or whatever and finds out we were lying to him. And then decommits to the school. And my coach never let me host a recruit again. And that's an honest to God true story. I'm sure you wish you did get a commission on every one of those surgeries, Tommy.
Well, my golf game would be better.
Yeah, you'd be playing a lot nicer golf courses, that's for sure. All right, Tommy,
no,
I would get
the lessons from better pros.
Yeah, there you go. You'd have Fluff as your caddy there. All right, well, I really appreciate your time, Tommy. I know it's late and you came on. I really appreciate it. Anytime you want to join us, you always can. The door is always open, and I really appreciate it. A lot of great insight. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, that's the great Tommy John there. I mean, he gave a lot of great insight there. I mean, you know, we have these preconceived notions, and, you know, I had my opinion on Matt Harvey, and he was very adamant about me being wrong about that. He agreed with you about the throwing in between starts. I mean, that's it's interesting. I mean, and he could tell. It's interesting because we had the little leaguer on, obviously passionate about baseball. This guy's been out of the league how many years? Close to 30 years now.
Yeah.
And still, the passion is still there. And, you know, the idea that he could just roll a curveball on Christmas morning if he wanted to is just, he's got that moxie to a major league pitcher, which is fantastic.
How about if Rich from Shelton was half as good as him, we would have won states.
We would have. If we had, that's exactly right. He could have rolled
out.
But
he wasn't.
No, but he wasn't.
He wasn't.
And we didn't.
Yeah.
And we were one of the biggest disappointments in all of American League.
And now
baseball.
We drink with him and laugh at him.
Yeah, we laugh at him and he sits the bench and slow pitch softball. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we'll get to some 5 and 10. We're going to do some Say What with the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be right back.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're going to like it. Quiznos. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Toasty.
How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's wrong way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily. Wrong Way uses shingle-packed meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At Wrong Way. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven, is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... what the? For a limited time only at Quiznos.
Black is back.
We're back with the Tri-State Sports Guys, and we just had a wonderful interview with Tommy John. We're going to take a call now, see what's going on the line.
What's up, line one?
Is this me?
Yes, what's up, buddy? Who's this?
All right, hey, listen, full disclosure. The bad press that you received last week, that was from me. My name is Matt, and I'm from Norwalk.
Yeah. You could at least save it after the show. You know what I mean? The phone's blowing up while the show's going on.
Listen, let me tell you something right now, okay? I've been listening to these guys for the past 2 years. I listen to sports radio every single day. That was one of the best interviews I've ever heard.
Which one? The Tommy John one?
The Tommy John one.
You liked it, huh?
Yep, I thought it was great. I thought you engaged him well. You asked great questions. He was an unbelievable guest. I cannot be more happy for you guys. That was one of the best interviews that I've ever heard. And I think a lot of times what happens is that when you listen to sports radio hosts, they make the thing about them, and you know, and they try to preserve the relationship in the future, and they don't ask necessarily honest questions. You guys asked honest questions, and that was one of the best interviews I've ever heard. So it's my point of picking up the phone and calling you and telling you guys did a great, great job.
We really appreciate that, man. And you know what? It was really helped by the fact that Tommy John was fantastic. He was just a really easy guy to listen to. I know Mike enjoyed it. I know I did. I know Tony enjoyed it. And we really appreciate it, man.
No, I kind of thought it was the fact that I came at you on a Duquette interview, and you had to step up your game a little bit, but whatever.
Yeah, you didn't like the Duquette interview, man. That's all right.
So, anyway,
you can't win them all. You know what I mean? You're a Yankee fan, so you probably win them all, but, you know, we can't. Us guys here, we don't win them all.
And, hey, 41-0, 2001. Take care, Dan.
Thanks, buddy. I love those references from Giants fans. I really do. They're all disgusting. And you know what? You bother me on every level. I got to listen to those things, you know?
Can I ask you a question before we get to Say What?
You can ask me a lot of questions. Go ahead.
So, clearly, you're a Vikings fan.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume everybody's just all in on AP. I mean, you're a big AP fan. I know there's sometimes people. So you're clearly, if you're going to own a jersey and you're an AP guy. Me and Tony are Bills fans. He's a Bills fan. I'm a Jets fan. Who on the Bills would be your go-to jersey? Is it C.J. Spiller at this point? Is it Mario Williams? And on the Jets, who the hell are you picking? If you, I mean, I'm still wearing my Chad Penning jersey at every game. So
I got two Bills. Number one, C.J. Spiller, Clemson guy. Number two, Cornelius Bennett. That's the one I want. You know what I mean?
Well, your safest bet is to go old school because nobody.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody can go old school. Right. I mean, so I'm saying if you have a kid, you want to get your kid a jersey. My daughter.
Right.
Right now, my daughter's only jersey. She's 2 years old. The only jersey right now is a Mark Sanchez jersey.
That's terrible. You love your daughter.
I love
her.
She's a button. I didn't get it. She was
gorgeous.
It was a hand-me-down from her cousin. So I got to get her a jersey. What jersey am I getting my 2-year-old daughter from the New York Jets?
That's a really good question.
I mean, San Antonio Holmes is my least
favorite. What about Dean Milner?
I don't buy into him yet.
You don't?
Not yet.
He's a Bama guy, man.
I know, but
he's
I feel like I didn't like that pick. Cause now you're sitting there saying, oh, all you have to do is replace Darrelle Revis. That's all. All you got to do is replace the best corner in the league. No pressure.
Well, who would you have taken instead of Milner? I mean, not an individual.
Offensive.
You would have gone offensive guy?
Yeah.
I understand that. But there's not a lot of guys to choose from.
Yeah, who are we taking? My Mangold? My daughter? I mean, we call her Icebox. She's
Joe
kind
Klecko.
Of a tank. But
how about Joe Klecko?
Well, Joe Klecko. I'm talking current.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. I mean, apparently now Matt Sims, because every Jet fan in the world thinks this guy's the best quarterback since freaking Willie Joe. But I don't know. Let's get into Say What. So we missed Say What last week. We didn't have it. So I want to hear some Say What, Tony D. I'm going to move the mic over to Tony D on the other side of the glass, and then we'll let you two handle this.
How about this? So, Denver. Denver and Baltimore, opening weekend, right? So the game is in Denver. But the NFL has Joe Flacco posters flying all around the stadium.
Wow.
Like literally outside of the Denver stadium.
Wow.
To which Peyton Manning says, it doesn't seem like it makes sense that the Denver Broncos have an opposing player on their stadium. On the actual stadium, they have a poster of Joe Flacco.
That sounds ridiculous. I mean, Peyton Manning. I love Joe Flacco. I do. I'm not going to sit here and say anything bad about him. But you got Peyton Manning. You got a team that looks a million times better than the Ravens do this year.
Yep.
And you're in Denver. Am I getting that right? You said
in Denver. It's hanging on their stadium. A poster of Joe Flacco is hanging on the Denver.
If there was an Aaron Rodgers uniform anywhere near, I don't even know what it's called now, the Metrodome, whatever they call it now, Mall of America Field, I would personally stop being, I would go Matt Scully. I'd stop being a Vikings fan.
They actually have a petition to try to get this banner taken down.
I can't even believe that that would even be a thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane.
It sounds made up.
It's unbelievable.
That's like, especially because of what happened, like last year. That's like hanging like a Ben Roethlisberger jersey up at Giant Stadium for Jet games. Like, oh, yeah, he killed us in that AFC Championship game with that third down completion. Yeah, let's hang a poster of him up.
Unbelievable.
It's bad enough, they got old Dodgers stuff at Citi Field when they opened. This is like, that times 1,000.
How about this? I think this was today, actually. I think your boy Yasiel Puig got removed midway through the game today for disciplinary actions. He wasn't hurt, anything like that.
Enough of that.
Just got pulled out of the game. Fifth inning. Got pulled out of the game.
He was at leadoff today too. Crawford was in second, starting last night. I'm all
for playing the game the right way. I heard the deal where Jerry Hairston, I mean, come on, Jerry. He's a little bit better than me, Jerry Hairston. And he pulled Puig aside and they're telling him how to play the game. He's a billion times better than Jerry Hairston. Jerry should be quiet.
So this from today, I don't know if we were going to get this on the 5 and 10. I hope we weren't. Either that or I just stole it. But RG3, clear to start week one. Think that's a good idea?
I think he's the franchise guy there. I think if they're telling you he's ready, then I'm going to take Shanahan's word for it. I mean, if he gets hurt or something happens, dude, I don't know what the hell that team's going to do. I really don't. So if they're telling me he's ready, Shanahan's a guy who's got some pedigree. He's won a Super Bowl and all that stuff. I get it. So if they're telling me he's ready, man, I'm going to go with them.
Yeah, supposedly the great Dr. Andrews saw him today and gave him the okay. So.
I hope he's ready, because otherwise they're going to be the most boring team to watch.
The great Dr. Andrews that was on the sideline when he still let him in the game and he ripped up his knee. I figured that guy would be gone from now. All we hear about is meeting Dr. Andrews. Like, this guy's Dr. Moreau or whatever, and he's got his little island, and he's just creating these great athletes. And yet he's on the sideline here telling Shanahan, no, he's good to go.
Yeah.
Is he good to go? Because I just saw his knee up around his hip.
Yeah. How about this? So this came out today. A writer says that Aaron Hernandez was a paranoid, frequent PCP user.
You know, I retweeted to the Bauer Show. You know, the guys at the Bauer Show are fans of us, and we're fans of theirs. I retweeted that video you had of that guy on PCP in Bridgeport.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, the dust in Connecticut is the best in the world. I'll put our dust over anywhere in the Union, in the Continental 48. I don't know what goes on in Alaska.
Right. Who would have ever thought this guy would be up to anything like that?
Well, now it's all coming out that, you know, he was on PCP for a while, and the guy went to Bill Belichick and said, I need to find people are out to kill me, and Bill Belichick told him to get a safe house somewhere. And that was the safe house in Bristol where his uncle was plotting murders. So there you go. That blood is on your hands there, Billy.
That worked well.
Yeah. A safe house. The guy needs a safe house. We don't want to cut him. But he could probably use a safe house.
Jesus Christ. Hi.
There's my daughter is getting involved in the show. We got a couple callers on here, Tony D. You want to just cut into a caller real quick?
Yep, here we go. Let's get going.
All right. Hey, line three, you're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this?
Hey, you got me?
Yeah, who's this?
Hey, Mike Corey from Norwalk. How are you guys?
Michael from Norwalk. How we doing, buddy?
Doing well. How's everything there?
I'm doing very well. I know you're doing good things out there. You're doing good deeds out there with Team Jesse, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's why I wanted to give a call and let everyone know that we're going to have a little charity fun run on September 7th, Saturday morning, at Cranberry Park. It's the 9/11 Heroes Run. And this is something that's done in conjunction with Team Jesse and the Travis Manning Foundation to raise money and awareness for families of fallen soldiers.
That's fantastic, man. And if anybody's out there listening and wants to get involved for a good cause, help some people out, these guys deserve our help and these ladies. You know, if you're out there, make a move. Help these guys out.
You guys played in a tournament too or something, right, Mike?
We did. We've played in a number over the few years since the foundation was founded back in 2011. This most recent one was down in Lake Placid. And we did well. We finished 2-2. We played against a tough Hopkins alumni team, Michael. And they beat us pretty handily.
My man, you can't mess with
the
Hopkins.
Good for them. But we had a great time. We've done a tournament in Miami the last few years, the original one before, the original Team Jesse team was done in Lax Vegas, which is a big tournament they have in Las Vegas. So we're doing this every now and then to raise money and awareness, and we've raised about $250,000 to date.
That's insane, dude. So is there a website people can go to? We'll post it, obviously, to our website and all that, but what's the website?
TeamJesse.org. And there you can find information all about the mission that we're doing. And this was something that my brother co-founded with a very good friend of his named Kevin Mincio. They went to college together at UConn and played lacrosse. And Kevin ended up being a VP at Goldman Sachs back in early 2000. And when the towers went down, he ended up quitting his job and enlisted and went and served. And that's where he met Jesse Williams. And they became really good friends. And Jesse was unfortunately killed in action back in 07, and he basically asked Kevin to take care of his daughter and, you know, the finances behind his daughter back then. And, you know, so initially we did that. We took that as our mission, but since then it's evolved into a full 501c3 charity, and it's just a promise to a friend that Kevin made, and it's really great stuff that they're doing, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, no, I've given some money to you guys in the past, and I'll keep doing it. It seems like a great cause, Mike, and anybody that's in the area that can help out down at, down at Cranberry Park, it would be great to do, and anything we could do to help, obviously, we will, Mike. So I really appreciate you calling in and promoting the stuff and doing the good work you're doing, buddy.
Thank you. We appreciate it, and thank you. And again, next Saturday, the 7th, at Cranberry Park, and there's information on TeamJesse.org, and there's more information that we'll get to you guys to hopefully get up on your site.
All right, sounds good. That's Mike from Norwalk, and again, we'll post all the links up on our site, And if you can make it down there, honestly, it's a good cause. And Mike's a really, really good guy, so help him out. Why don't we should we get into the 5 and 10 right now? You got any more say what's, Tom?
No, we're good.
We're good with saying what's. Why don't we get into the NFC talk then? We were planning on maybe not getting to it this week, but I think we got time to get to it. Why not?
It looks like it.
We've touched on a lot of things. We've done Little League Baseball, college football. I mean, this is an eclectic show, my dude.
Yeah. Smorgasbord.
He is. So last week we broke down the AFC, and luckily we were saved at the bell when we were about to talk about the AFC East. That's when we got Dan Duquette called in. So it saved me from just some predicting just great things from the Jets. I'm glad we did, because now you'll never know what my predictions are of the Jets. Which is good.
Probably better.
It's probably for the best for everybody. Yeah. So let's talk about the NFC. We'll go west to east. We'll start out west, which is obviously a great division, Danny. How do you see – I mean, everybody is in love with the Niners, and they should be. But that rivalry, I think, and we've talked about on the show, that rivalry brewing between the Niners and the Seattle Seahawks is something that has got legs that could last, because the two coaches – they're entrenched there. They're going to be there a while. They've hated each other since college. They've got a history together. You've got Sherman, who I love. I'll be curious to feel your feelings about Sherman. I love everything about the guy. And the guy he grew up in Compton, went to Stanford, right? I mean, you don't see a lot of Compton kids going to Stanford.
No.
Graduated with like a 4.0 from Stanford, but also runs his mouth like nobody else in the league.
Yeah.
I love everything about that guy. So before we even get it, he's, to me, the face of the West. What are your thoughts of Richard Sherman?
Well, I mean, I love the confidence, the brashness, all that
That's
stuff.
That's what football's about.
Yeah, it is, and it's kind of like just in your face, here we are, we're coming for you. We don't care if you made the Super Bowl. We don't care about anything.
And he puts stupid Skip Bayless in his place, which is great.
Well,
that guy stinks.
Skip's a nerd. But the thing about it is, the team, San Fran, you're right. They have all this publicity now, and Kaepernick, and the team's great. Patrick Willis, all the stuff.
Kaepernick, what's his name? So Kaepernick's could be the best quarterback of all time.
Is that Jaworski?
Yeah. Jaws.
Oh, that's Jaws. Come on, he was an Eagle. But the thing about it is, I love the Niners.
Is that right?
I'm unapologetic about it. I'm not a Niners fan.
Yeah.
But I love them more so than I love the Seahawks in every possible way. I love Kaepernick. I'm not willing to put him up there with Marino and Elway and all those guys in Montana yet. But I could see the Seahawks being a wild card and going deep. I mean,
are they both double-digit wins?
I think so, and I think the Seahawks have such a unique home field advantage. That place is loud as hell, and it's just crazy. And but I do like the Niners maybe at 12-4, and the Seahawks at 11-5 maybe. I'm doing my math in my head. How's that?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Game maybe.
The thing I worry about with the Niners, So they Crabtree's out essentially for the season, right? They did pick up Bolden. Moss gave you what he gave you last year. I mean, he filled his role. He still did draw the double teams. He still was that threat, although he didn't put up big numbers. But I'm not a big believer in these cliche things, but I think the sophomore slump is a real thing when you see it with quarterbacks. I mean, I predicted it with Cam Newton last year, and you saw a regression there. You saw what happened with Josh Freeman. That guy in his first full season was fantastic, had ridiculous numbers. He had a big regression. I just think it's such a – there's too much evidence behind it. And so I think you get a guy like him, and you're going to see it with both of those teams, though. So, who's more going to be more susceptible to the sophomore slump? I think you're going to see a little bit out of both of them. I don't think Colin Kaepernick's the best player and best quarterback in the history of football.
No
I think
does.
You will see some regression there. I think it's going to be a battle down to week 17 there in January, where you're who's going to win that division. They're clearly both playoff teams, but I think that there will be a battle. I don't think that the Niners are head and shoulders ahead of the Seahawks because of that Seahawks secondary. It's legit, man, and this is a passing league, and if you can shut down the pass, you shut down a lot of teams, and they're going to be in a lot of games. Now there's other interesting teams in the West. I mean, the Cardinals were atrocious offensively last year. They had a solid defense, and they added Carson Palmer. And we could talk about Carson Palmer all we want. The guy threw for 4,000 yards last year in Oakland, and they stunk.
Yeah, they did.
So I think you're going to see, Larry Fitzgerald already feels bad for him because he really should be the best receiver in the league, and he's not being able to showcase his talents because he's always throwing the ball to him. He's going to get plenty of opportunities, and maybe I'm a Notre Dame homer, but I think Michael Floyd breaks out a little bit there.
You do, huh?
I don't think they're a playoff team, But I think that they could split with either one of those teams that we just talked about, whether it's San Francisco or Seattle. I really do.
I'm going to take your word for that because the only Cardinals I really pay attention to play in St. Louis. Speaking of which, do you like Sam Bradford? Are you a fan of his? Do you think anything of him? Do you think he's the kind of guy that's going to be a game changer, or is he just people going to remember him as a guy who was good at Oklahoma?
You know, I think he got way overhyped. And, you know, everybody wants to bash Mark Sanchez for being a bust. I mean, this guy was – I mean, he came out as a rookie. He threw for – he had more attempts than anybody else.
They paid him like $50 million.
Yeah, and then he took a big step back.
Yeah.
He did come – you know, he came – under Jeff Fisher, he did have a decent season last year. They got the kid, Tavon Austin, everybody likes and all that. I'm not the biggest Sam Bradford fan. I mean, I'm not a – I don't think the guy's a complete bust, but I do think he's an average NFL quarterback, which is good. You know, he's nowhere near the top 10, maybe not even the top 15 in my eyes. And so this idea that he is like, you know, everybody's like, well, he was a smart pick at number one and was worth all that money, to me is kind of bogus.
Right.
Because he really is not turning into that type of guy.
Not so far, no. No, I agree with you in that sense. But
so who finished ahead? Who finishes third in that division? To me, that's the question. I mean, there's the debate at the top.
You could pick it out of a hat. I mean, I honestly don't know enough about Arizona.
Yeah.
I know. I remember watching Sam Bradford. As you alluded to earlier, I'm more of a college guy. I watched Bradford a lot when he was at OU, and I thought he would be really good.
Yeah.
I thought by now, even, you know, I know you need weapons. I thought, but even by now, he would be, like you were saying, top 10-ish, but he's not, though.
He's not. Let's not pretend that he is. He's
right,
not.
But I don't know. I mean, how many wins do you give Arizona? Seven?
Seven.
And what do you give them, six?
I think they're in the same boat, seven, six.
Six. So,
I mean, they're in the same boat because, they're. You know, I think that they, you know, what's interesting is St. Louis did very well in their division last year.
Yeah.
I think they were like 5-1-1 or something crazy like that. I mean, they did very well in their division. I don't see them repeating that. And so – you know, it's a very good division. That's what it's interesting. Those two teams are good, and if they were in the AFC East, they'd be competing for the division title. But they're not going to. And I think, you know, the loss of Steven Jackson over to Atlanta, I think that's going to hurt. You know, they drafted the kid Pede, who's suspended. They've got, you know, some rookie backs over there. You know, Arizona got Mendenhall, who I'm not a Mendenhall fan at all. I think that he was always a product of, you know, the fact that they always had a good offensive lineup in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of his at all. But I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I don't think there's going to be any doormats in that league, in that division. So it'll be an interesting division. Now, heading down south, Atlanta, they keep taking those steps.
I know.
I am a big Matt Ryan guy. Big Matt Ryan guy. I mean, he is undoubtedly, to me, a top 10 quarterback. I mean, I don't want to point to his playoff record and this and that. I know that all that. But he put his team in position last year to send them to the Super Bowl, and their defense is what falls.
Yeah.
I worry about their defense. I have no problems with what they're doing offensively.
I agree with you that I like him. I've liked him since he was at BC. But you question, like you said, the playoff record. Is he Peyton Manning in that sense, that he's going to struggle for a while? I've had to do with the Patriots. Is he going to ascend like a John Elway, or is he going to be a bum like Fran Tarkenton or something like that that never wins anything, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I wonder. And I look at that team, and you see the weapons, and you just said about their defense blowing up there in the playoffs, which was brutal.
Yeah.
I like him. My question for you really is, how much does Sean Payton's return to New Orleans change anything in that division?
A lot.
You think so?
I'm a big believer in the head coach of the NFL.
You didn't like Joe Vitt? You think Joe Vitt had it?
I think that as much as I like the offense in Atlanta, I think New Orleans ascends. And I know they got Rob Ryan now.
Do they
right?
beat Atlanta?
Yes.
They do?
Yes.
This is groundbreaking.
Yeah, I really do. Yeah. I think that they come in, they're going to win that division 11-12 games. I think Atlanta makes the playoffs. They're the second wild card team. I think the other wild card team does come out of the West. I think Atlanta's the second wild card team with 10 or 11 wins, but I think New Orleans wins that division. I really do. I think that Sean Payton makes that kind of impact.
Yeah, they make me sick.
And New Orleans does.
The Vikings NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I can hear
that. High load, far, which, you know, the refs are supposed to just watch the quarterback. So, what about Cam Newton? Does he do anything this year? What about Tampa Bay? Do they do anything?
Well, I'll start with Cam Newton. I think the Cam Newton we saw last year is the real Cam Newton. I think that the, you know, 400-plus passing yards a game that he jumps into the league with, that's not the Cam Newton we're going to see. I think we're going to see a Cam Newton that has the ability to take over games and has the ability to just disappear and cost his team games. I think he's a lot like Mike Vick in that regard. And I don't think that they're going to contend for a playoff spot. They're going to be solid. I do like Greg Olsen at tight end. I think he's going to be a guy, when we talk about fantasy, I think, you know, I mentioned him in our fantasy sleepers. I think Greg Olsen will be a stud at tight end. Steve Smith seems to be ageless, but at some point, this guy was supposed to be done 3 years ago. And I think Cam Newton is not the kind of guy that could just can go out and outperform Drew Brees and Matt Ryan in that division. I think that Carolina is a 6-win team. And then as far as Tampa Bay, I know they added Darrell Revis. They added another guy to their secondary. And Josh Freeman is a guy who's very frustrating. When he burst on the scene, I'm like, this guy is legit. I mean, look at his touchdown to interception ratio. As a rookie, it was like, as his first year started, it was like a 28-8 ratio, something like that. And you're like, this guy's legit. You know, they've got a good wide receiver and Vincent Jackson. But again, I feel like I don't buy into their defense. I don't buy into the Revis. We're going to see the impact of Revis.
I agree with you that it's a two-horse race in that division to me. I think Atlanta's better than New Orleans. Putting everything aside with what the Saints did to my Vikes, I still like Atlanta more than I like them. Then the next one, which I don't even want to mention football teams from Wisconsin and Illinois. I don't want to have to do that. I'll talk about the Lions. Break down the NFC North for me.
You want me to just break it down?
Well, so that I don't have to get sick to my stomach talking about number 12 up there at Lambeau, Jay Cutler, whatever. I don't care about him.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that there's there's a lot of hype around, Chicago. You know, I think everybody likes what they got, the Alshon Jeffrey, and they've got Brandon Marshall, and Jake Cutler does some great things, and, you know, their defense is always very good. But Green Bay is going to win this division by 2 games, I think.
I agree, and it bothers me on every level.
And in regards to your boys up in Minnesota, I don't think they've got a quarterback that can do it. And I don't think that Adrian Peterson, as great as he was and as great as he was for my fantasy team last year with 2,000 yards, I don't see how they're going to do enough offensively because, you know, eventually I do think Matt Castle is going to be the starter there.
I hope so. I honest to God hope so.
I said Matt Castle. My daughter got so excited in studio.
She knows her football. That's
she
why.
Does. She's a
she
big
knows fan. Christian Ponder. The only thing he's got going is a good-looking wife. That's it. His wife, that Sam Steele, whatever she is, that brought on.
Oh, yeah, that's his wife?
She's, yeah. Sam Ponder, whatever she is now, she's gorgeous. But I've been asked by a few people what I think Peterson will do this year. What's your buddy Peterson going to do? And I think he'll rush for like 1,700 yards. But I think Ponder is such a hindrance to doing anything. I can't see him. Mike just went for a walk, by the way. He's just out. He's just gone. But, to pontificate about my Vikings for a moment, I think the only quarterback I prefer Ponder over is Mark Sanchez. That's being honest and real about everything. He's the only guy I'd rather have than Mark Sanchez.
Not even, what's the guy's name?
Your boy, Tool.
He went to where, Washington State, Tool?
Just so the listeners at home know, my daughter's been in studio for about 20 minutes. Yeah. She's been a doll in here.
She's outstanding.
We started talking about the Minnesota Vikings.
She's out.
She went berserk. Yeah. There were things being thrown around this office. It was insane. I had to get her out of here.
She was just missing the Helga headdress. That's all. She was angry. And you know what? I'm very sorry for that, James, and I apologize for everything.
I thought I wanted no part of it.
Yeah, what about they gave Matt Stafford all that money?
Yeah.
Any noise out of Detroit?
They got Reggie Bush, who said they were going to be the best offense in the NFC and all of that. Mm-hmm. They have a great defensive line that doesn't seem to ever put things together.
They lost Cliff Averill.
Yeah, I think Detroit is it's back to the old Detroit. I'll be honest with you.
So?
I mean, Matt Stafford, he's another guy. He got drafted in the same draft as Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez gets killed over and over. What has Matt Stafford ever done? He had one. He throws for a lot of yards. How many playoff games has Matt Stafford won? I mean, let's get real here. I'm not saying Mark Sanchez is better than him.
No, he's not.
But can we start to talk about, I mean, Matt Stafford is talked about in this league like he's an elite quarterback. He's not.
No.
Can we be honest with each other? I mean, I feel like if I could be honest with anybody, I could be honest with you, Dan.
You should.
You should be honest with me.
I'm going to be honest with you right now.
Is he an elite quarterback?
No. But I remember hearing his name, and I thought it was odd when he was coming out of a Texas high school going to Georgia. I remember him back that far. Yeah. He goes to UGA.
Yeah.
He's a good quarterback in a really tough league and all that stuff. I see the Lions twice a year, and Thanksgiving, you know, wherever else I see him, you know. I don't know the numbers exactly. I don't know why they gave him all that money.
They gave him a ton.
I mean, to me.
How many starts does he have in his career? 30?
I don't know.
I mean,
but
the guy made 35 starts?
Yeah,
I mean,
I can remember back
not healthy.
To being a kid, seeing Scott Mitchell, number 19, their quarterback at the Pontiac Silverdome for Wayne Fonts, and I think Stafford's just a couple notches better than him. I don't think he's clearly up there with Rodgers or Brady or Breeze or Manning, the Mannings or Rivers or whoever else you want to mention. I was just stunned by that deal. I know a guy from Detroit who liked that deal.
Yeah.
And talked me off the cliff about it.
He puts up big numbers. He's got the best wide receiver in the league, bar none.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I like the guy Broyles they got, but I mean, I think you could put a lot of guys in that offense that could make plays offensively.
Yeah.
I mean, so he's not a guy who's going to go out there and win games. Calvin Johnson goes down, they're done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't see a team rely on their wide receiver. There's not teams in this league that win Super Bowls where their best player is their wide receiver.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
I think Broyles, to your point, I think he'll help. I remember him when he was at Oklahoma. He's a good slot
guy. Yeah, he broke all kinds of records there.
He tore his ACL or his MCL or something, but he was fantastic. He was a fantastic player. He'll open up some things for Megatron. But going to the NFC East, I'm just going to say this because, like I said, you're the NFL guy. Am I crazy to like the Giants?
Yeah.
I am?
Well,
you really think – oh, I know Dallas, everybody wants to talk to me about them every year, but it's like a bad movie I've already seen twice. I don't want to talk about them. Me, you can talk about them.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about Washington? You like if
I think Washington takes a step back.
Yeah, and who's going to win the division? Dallas?
Dallas. And I know I get burned. Dallas every year. This is Dallas's year. This is Dallas's year.
Right.
I am a Tony Romo guy. I like Tony Romo.
Really?
I think Tony Romo is a top 10 quarterback. I'll take Tony Romo over Matt Stafford 7 days a week, twice on Sunday. I mean, without a doubt. I think this guy is a winner. This guy consistently has a quarterback rating well into the 90s. His touchdown interception ratio is always good. Everybody talks about his crazy interceptions, but when you look at his body of work, he throws untimely interceptions. But I think if you look at his body of work, a lot of games last year, it wasn't his fault they were losing those games. I think that Dallas finally puts things together. I think that maybe a change of defensive coordinator helps. Maybe the switch to 4-3 helps. I mean, they've had talent on that defensive side, and you always wonder why they can't stop anybody. They needed a clean slate there on defense. I think they have weapons on offense. I like Dez Bryant. I like I like Tony Romo, and I like he could throw to Jason Witten. I like Miles Austin still. He's kind of this forgotten guy after he broke out, in his first full season there. I like DeMarco Murray. I think that they have a lot of things they do well. I think DeMarcus Ware can rush the passer as good as anybody. I mean, this guy is
he's put together a
Hall of Fame career already.
Yeah,
this guy's a Hall of Famer right now. If he doesn't play another snap, he's a Hall of Famer.
You know what I'll tell you? Is when I look at a quarterback, I look at if they're coming down the field at the end of the game in the playoffs against my team, how afraid of them am I?
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at that division, and I'm not saying it's just about quarterbacks, but it is a quarterback game, I'm more afraid of Eli Manning in the clutch coming down the stretch at the Metrodome than I am of Tony Romo. That's me, and hey, look, they could have a phenomenal year, I don't know, but I have a feeling in my gut with Coughlin now, he's got the two Super Bowls, all of a sudden now he's the best coach of all time, I understand all that stuff. I have a tough time selling off the Giants. I mean,
you don't think they're going to take a regression defensively?
They could.
Yeah.
But my thing is, I've seen them do it.
Yeah,
I'm saying? I'm not sitting here giving you stats or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I've seen them do it twice now against improbable odds.
Here's where I do agree with you, and I had a tough time with this division because I only think one team's making the playoffs out of this division.
And it's going to be Dallas.
Although all four teams, You can make a case for any of them. You can make a case why they stink.
We got to talk about filling the sec, though.
Yeah, you can make a case for all four of them, and you can make a strong case why they all have flaws.
Right.
So I do think there's only going to be one team, and it's going to be a 10-win team out of the division that makes the playoffs, and that's it. And what worries me about the Giants is, you know, they win the Super Bowl, they miss the playoffs. It's kind of like their MO. Like, you know, it's like they do kind of find a way to get back to their, you know, they have an identity like the Steelers. We never want to write the Steelers off. That is the same way as the Giants. And I try to put my since I've been doing the show, I've developed a hate. I never hated the Giants. I never really did.
I have my whole life.
But
and
I
now more so because of Matt Scully.
I hate him because of Matt Scully.
Yeah.
I hate him because Matt Scully, you know, because they all, we talked about it last week. They're this classy organization, which is just a phony thing that they've created for themselves. So I began to start to, like, root against them. And I never really did. I honestly never did. I remember as a kid in, like, 91, you know, I was rooting for them against the Patriots for sure when the Patriots were undefeated.
Do you want to know how petty they are? How many Super Bowls do they have now?
Five? Four?
I think it's four.
Yeah.
And they take a lowly Vikings fan on the airwaves and have to throw a 41-0 victory
exactly.
In his face.
Like, why would you do that? What is the point of that? But they're all classy.
But they're classy.
They're classy.
That's the thing.
They're so classy.
Whereas if we I hate people that say that. If the Vikings ever win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, you can say as a Vikings fan.
But I don't. I think if it.
But you're a Vikings fan.
Yeah, but I don't get a ring.
No.
I love one.
No, but I'm saying we as a Vikings fan, if the Vikings fan win the Super Bowl.
Okay, so if we win the Super Bowl, I'm not going to go find Packers fans I know and throw it in their face because it's like, dude, you're still better than us. So what the hell do you have to prove to me by criticizing my team? All you do is win.
Yeah.
So the Giants fans, it's like, I still think they're going to be a good team. And again, you know all the players and all the ins and outs of everything. I just think they're going to be a good team. But I want to talk about, because I, like I said, a college guy, Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
He leaves Eugene, Oregon.
He could have been there for the rest of his life.
Because there was a storm of mess coming his way with NCAA issues.
Well, he
went home after the bowl game and thought about things and decided, you know what, I'd rather be in Philly. Then Eugene, where it's beautiful and the air is nice and clean and everything like that. So he's in Philly.
People ride bikes everywhere.
Absolutely. There's no cars in Oregon. And now he's in Philly, and he's going to run this speedball type of deal. And I want you to
tell me. And he didn't hit during practice.
I know that. I want you to tell me something, though.
They don't hit during practice?
They don't hit during the preseason. Yeah. They don't tackle during preseason. They didn't tackle.
Yeah. I want you to tell me this.
They're playing football in the NFL. They don't tackle. Just let that settle in. I don't want to talk over you.
Do you know the guy from St. John's University there in Minnesota? He's a D3 coach. He's got more wins than anybody in football.
Yeah.
John, Italian guy, too.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
He never had any contact in practice and no playbook. No playbook.
Yeah.
None. But I have a tough time believing in the speedball concept in the NFL, just like I have in the NBA, that all you're going to do is run up and down the court like Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah.
And you're not worried about your defense being exhausted.
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe that that's going to work in the NFL, whether they start Nick Foles or Michael Vick or whoever the hell is playing for them, or who they have, the kid from Barkley, from SC. You're going to play speedball in the NFL and it's going to work. You think it's going to work?
I think that it's got to be a tweaked type thing.
Yeah,
I don't
so.
Think it's going to be the posters on the sideline with plays and all that. And I think he's got to be too smart to do something like that. I think that they have so much talent. I mean, I love Shady McCoy. I think that Vic can be good still. I mean, you know, he's shown – I know he's had a couple of bad seasons back-to-back. I think he could be good. I mean, I think they're an interesting team. I think that they finish ahead of the Redskins. I like them more than the Redskins. I would pick them to finish third. I don't think they have enough to make the playoffs because of that. I think there's going to be such like a change here with Chip Kelly, and there is always a learning curve with a coach coming out of college. And there's not a huge track record – of these guys coming. I mean, you look at Barry Switzer, well, he was handed the best team in football.
And Spurrier, when he was in Washington, he was leaving practice early to go play golf.
It's a different thing. I mean, there's guys – Saban was horrible. I mean, it's an entirely different skill set that could do those two things. So I don't think that they can compete. But what's interesting is I can make a case for them. I could sit there and make a case for the Philadelphia Eagles because of the talent they have on offense, because they have – talent on defense, but they just can never put it together, and maybe it's a system issue and all that. I just think that they're not a playoff team. I don't think the Redskins are a playoff team. I'm going with the Cowboys, although I know intellectually, it's a stupid thing because they always
it is. And you know what? I agree with you with the one playoff team from the East.
Mm-hmm.
And come January, I'm gonna laugh at you when the Giants.
It's the Giants, yeah.
And I'm going to be sick about it because I don't like it. I'd rather see the Cowboys.
Can we not even cover their games?
Let's not even talk about
it. They make the playoffs. We won't talk.
Anybody that calls in about Giants games, we just hang up.
Well, we do have a caller about Giants games, I assume. We got Matt from Norwalk calling in. This might be our first two-time caller in one show.
This guy doesn't sleep.
Matt, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
You're all class. Hey, you guys are all class, my man.
All I want to say to Dan is, and I have some credibility here. I don't know if you know this or not, and if you don't, I apologize. I went to college in Minnesota.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm saying that gives me kind of a little bit of a perspective on the way that I feel towards Vikings fans. I went to college for 4 years in Minnesota. So I do have an understanding of the way that the Vikings fans think,
Did you go to school in Minnesota with me? So you're throwing it in my face. You don't, you know. I know Jets fans are jerks, but I'm not here yelling at Mike.
A jerk?
Yeah, you should be.
No, Dan, I didn't go to school with you, but I don't associate you necessarily with the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, until you're on the show here, yeah, I will totally go and say, hey, yes, you're a Vikings fan, and I'll say what I have to say against the Vikings. So I understand that. I mean, we had if you remember, when I graduated, and I graduated in 1997, Denny Green and the Minnesota Vikings beat the Giants in that playoff game that they should never have won. So I got a lot of stuff against me on that, you know. So, I mean, what I'm trying to tell you is that
I mean, let that
rivalry against the Vikings.
Saying, that one go.
And that's where this comes from.
You know what I mean? Move on. Worry about the Eagles and the Redskins and the Cowboys like we worry about the...
No, not necessarily. The Vikings have been a very formidable opponent in the NFC, like they have when they were against the Saints. So, you know, no, the Vikings are somebody that's always going to be a threat, you know? So, yeah, so when we said that, yeah, that's where I was coming from. So,
all right, I 41-0 game, probably better than most Giants fans do because it's still sickening to me. He threw that fade pass in the end zone to that fullback, that fat guy catching a pass in the corner of the end zone. And they were dancing. I had to look at the Giants fans having a party. And so be happy about it. And don't worry about the Vikings. Yeah. We're not going to cause any problems. Believe me, we're going to play 16 games and go home.
Well, I was actually, me and my buddy Billy Ireland were actually at that game, the 41-0 game. And, you know, when you look back at that whole thing, and that was when Randy Moss said that he wasn't even trying at that game. So, I mean, I guess where, you know, when you get through your most impressionable years when it was in college, you know, I used to have a lot of Viking fans coming at me on it, and that's where I came from it on that. So, you know, I will say this. I mean, Viking fans are passionate. They're great fans. You know, when you go to any bar in Norwalk, Connecticut, you're not going to see people wrap around watching the games. But if you go to any bar in Minnesota, everyone's at a bar watching the Vikings. So I will say that the Viking fans are absolutely great fans, and it's kind of fun to watch. So.
All right, Maddie. Well, thanks for trying. I mean, you're still not a classy fan, but
no.
I appreciate the you calling back. All right. So let's get to a quick 5 and 10. I'm just going to start rapid firing some thoughts at you that are some stories that I've come up with this week that I find interesting. Now, the first one is I'm big time into phony outrage because I like politics a lot, and the phony outrage in politics pisses me off more than anything in the world. And in the sports world, it's just as bad. And the phony outrage this week, and you might disagree with me on this, and I've been on the other side of this, and I'm in the minority on this. This phony outrage this week about this farmer's almanac predicting that there's a snowstorm in late January, early February. And now we have to really worry about the fact that there's a snowstorm coming for this Super Bowl, and it could impact who wins the Super Bowl. And
right.
You're supposed to feel bad for some fan from Atlanta who's got their team finally in the Super Bowl ready to win, and they're not going to be prepared because there's going to be 2 feet of snow dumping. First of all, the Farmer's Almanac is a joke. I mean, it's not Biff Tannen here when we're looking at this thing.
Biff Tannen.
He did it. But you mentioned it.
But but even if there is a 2-foot snowstorm, in what world, in what sport does the best team always win? Especially in football. You're telling me the Giants, the 9-7 Giants were the best team in football when they won the Super Bowl? That's what sports is all about. And we talk about it in college football all the time. Was Notre Dame the second best team in the college football last year? Absolutely not. But they made that's just the rules of the game, and the best team wound up winning. I can name you the last 10 champions in a bunch of leagues, other than maybe the NBA, where typically the best team wins. I could look at college basketball. I could look at Major League Baseball for sure. I could look at the NFL. I mean, the freaking Patriots were 16-0, the best team of all time. They didn't win a Super Bowl. The Packers were 15-1, the best team since the Patriots. They didn't make it out of their first round game. So now all of a sudden, because they made this decision to play at Giant Stadium, now it's like questioning the integrity of the game and integrity of the Super Bowl. The NFL is about entertainment.
Right.
And there's nothing more entertaining than being in New York. And if there's a threat of snow, that's the biggest rating thing in the world. So why all of a sudden are we into the sanctity of the best team has to win? That's phony outrage. First with the Super Farmers Almanac. But on top of that, and the idea that this weather is going to impact the game, so what?
First thing is, if Notre Dame played in the SEC, they'd been playing in the Bell Helicopter Bowl. They'd have been in the Bell Helicopter Bowl for all you Notre Dame fans out there. Secondly, there's really two words. It's football.
Yeah.
It's Mike just had a small seizure over here. He got so excited. It's football.
Are we crazy?
So when you have a team.
It has to be in some neutral 78-degree dome now for it to be like this is going to be the real test of people.
You look at some of the
insane?
Some of the biggest pansies in the world, and we both play the game. Are baseball players compared to the other sports?
Oh,
okay, so when San Fran is in the World Series against Texas, I didn't hear Josh Hamilton complaining that it's a little bit blustery and cold at AT&T Park.
Yeah.
So when you're a football player, whether you're the Monsters in the Midway or you play in a dome in Arizona, you got to be stoked to be in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
There's no better city.
For your opponent,
there's no better city in the world than the New York metropolitan area. It's
mm-hmm.
phenomenal. It's gorgeous snow. I love snow.
Yeah.
Why would you complain?
Because
why would anyone have a problem?
It's ESPN, dude.
And I gotta be honest,
they make the freaking story. They tell us what's a big story and what's not a big
right.
story.
I don't want to agree with you, but I do. So it's football. Get over it. Play the Super Bowl wherever it is. If it's a dome, I think it's stupid anyway. You should play outside. I got no problem. I don't care. I hope they get a blizzard. I hope they get a blizzard and there's two cold weather teams playing and they're all complaining. I would think that would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic.
Be fantastic.
All right, number two, we'll go local here, but it is national news. James Blake announces his retirement. He's a guy, he's our age, from Fairfield, right around the corner from where we live. I've met James Blake. I know a lot of guys that know him very well. He never really fulfilled this promise. I mean, he was supposed to be the next American great tennis player. I don't follow tennis, but I do like – I think the women's tennis is actually much more entertaining. I think there's much better athletes and better competitors there, whereas the men seem to be much more top-heavy. It's always the same guy playing.
It's like women's soccer.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is. I think women's soccer is more entertaining as well. So I think it's just too top-heavy. But, what are your thoughts on James Blake overall? I mean, when you think about him, is it just cool that he's a local guy who made it this far, or is he like – in 20 years, are tennis players going to be talking about? Tennis fans going to be talking about? I don't think they really will be.
No, I mean, it's a situation for me. Like you just said, I watch maybe some of the Grand Slams, but I'm not big on it. I'm a big golf fan, and I think the sports are similar in a sense, where if a guy's career ends and he never won a major or he never won a Grand Slam in tennis or whatever, people are prone to saying that the guy was like a clown or he was no good or he was whatever. What you have to realize is James Blake at some point, I don't know what he got, what he ascended to in the rankings. He's one of the top, I would bet, 20 men's tennis players in the world, and the dude's from Fairfield.
Yeah.
Have you ever been up to Fairfield?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you don't expect that. You expect that from a guy like Federer or somebody like Nadal in Spain.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. I mean, the fact that I'm almost positive he didn't win a Grand Slam.
I don't think so.
Think so. I think it's a cool story. Anytime somebody locally
and you know what
is
it is
doing something, it's cool.
Tennis players tend to come out of these factories where they
right.
like play from their
like
6-year-old.
Like the Balotelli
yeah.
thing or whatever it is. Balotelli
yeah.
down in Florida or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, you're just like always playing. And this kid like just came up through Fairfield tennis. I mean, I know guys that play. Paco Fabian, who calls in the show all the time, is a tennis pro up in Easton, played against him and beat him. You know, like he was
yeah.
just like a guy who made it in tennis, which doesn't happen. If you don't come from one of these factories where you're just playing tennis,
right.
go to some academy
right.
where you're playing all the time, that doesn't happen. So it's pretty cool. The only downside I have about him, if you look at any of his bios, this is from Bridgeport, Connecticut. You're not from Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Yeah.
You went to Fairfield High School.
But here's the thing. He
you're
went,
not from Bridgeport. It's like John Mayer says he's from freaking Bridgeport.
Yeah.
John Mayer.
See, Blake went and
you
played.
Because you have tattoos, now you're from Bridgeport.
Blake went and played at Wimbledon. U.S. Open, French Open, the Australian Open, and Paco, who beat him, as you just said, is just the finest poker player I've ever seen.
Well, he is.
He's fantastic.
He'll call you
yeah.
on everything, dude, because
yeah.
you're not better than him.
At anything. At anything. So, yeah, I agree with you there.
All right, number three, real quick, Bill's quarterback situation, complete mess.
Was I right last week? I mentioned E.J. Manuel being injured.
Yeah.
Was I right at the time?
Yeah, you were right at the time. Yep, he was injured at the time.
That's unbelievable to me. I swear to God, dude, that is like unbelievable.
And now they brought Matt Leinart and everybody made this big deal. I mean, I'd rather have Matt Leinart starting than Jeff Toole. The guy played at Washington, had a 4-20. Yeah, Washington State had a 4-20 record.
Yeah.
And I think got benched.
Yeah.
And yet he's going to start.
You
there's never. I'll tell you a quick stat though. There's never been an undrafted free agent rookie start in the NFL season one.
Is that right?
Yeah. Week one.
Well, plus, he's got, I think he played 1 year for Mike Leach. You'll never be good if you play for Mike Leach in college. There's no shot.
But back on terrible quarterback, one of, and we've mentioned a lot on the show, which is
too much.
Probably too much.
Too much.
We're going to give him some credit here.
Do it.
One of his bold predictions from January was that Terrell Pryor would start all 16 games for the Raiders, and we laughed at him.
Yeah.
Right now, this guy's in line. He's going to be – I mean, he beat out Matt Flynn. He's gonna be starting opening day.
Yeah. There was nothing wrong with him at Ohio State.
Yeah.
You looked at him, and he was a I would say, very good college quarterback.
Yeah.
And he had to go into the supplemental draft because of all the stuff that happened with Tressel and all that
yeah,
stuff, which is ridiculous. And they were selling uniforms or whatever. You know, I know a lot of people disagree with this. Those kids should be compensated with more than education. He's making a move to do something. Now he's in the NFL. I don't see why he won't, if they get some better players around him, which is going to be tough because they're not very good,
yeah.
why he can't be a serviceable quarterback.
I don't know why. If I'm the Raiders, I'm starting him. You have him, McFadden, you just go for like a quirky type offense because they're not going to win by just dropping back
no.
with Matt Flynn. And just,
run the wing T.
Just do something crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Do something crazy. And then the fifth one, Tony D, you watch the VMAs?
I didn't watch him, no.
Good.
I refuse.
And that's all you got to say.
I refuse, but I did.
Because your boy
did.
Macklemore was on. I thought you maybe had a review on Macklemore.
Please. You know, him and Miley Cyrus should go crawl into a hole somewhere.
That's it. All right, we got 2 minutes left. We do have a caller calling in. We're going to end the show with a call on line one. You're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this?
Tri-State, it's Corden, West Coast.
Hey, Danny Corden. How we doing, brother?
We got 2 minutes.
What's up, man? What's happening? I'm more called to catch the tail end of your show, but it sounds like I missed the interviews. Speaking of sports media, do you guys follow Frank Isala on Twitter?
No,
he's the writer for what, the Post or the News or something? Frank Isala?
Yeah, you guys follow. He's one of my favorite followers on Twitter, New York Daily News. He's really the Knicks beat writer, but he also chimes in on baseball and some other stuff, U.S. Open. He's the most cynical, fucking most hilarious, sarcastic guy. You got to follow him on Twitter. I mean, he's a Yankee fan, but he makes fun of the Mets because, you know, there's this notion that the Mets were planning on contending in 2014. Now, obviously, as Mets fans, we know that that was the goal. But, I mean, he's ridiculing them, saying, you know, as if no other team plans on contending in 2014. It's just, you got to follow him. It's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I know Frank Isola. He's on the fan a bunch. I'll definitely check him out. As far as them contending in 2014, who knows? You know, it's it's a crapshoot at this point. Well, Danny, we're up against the end of the show here. Appreciate you calling. You got to check out the we're going to pull out the interview from tonight. We'll have it up on the website tonight. I think it's going to blow up because it was a great interview, and I think Tommy John really gave some great insight. So, Danny, I appreciate you calling in. Keep listening, brother. That's the end of our show with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Always check us out on tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys. We have 666 likes. We need another like because when we go to sleep with this, one of us won't be here next week. I'm sure of that. And at tristate_sports. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back next week. We'll try to one-up our guests somehow next week. Thanks.